This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. The Big Show.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca on a Wednesday here in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. Thank you for tuning us in. Lots to get to today. Winnipeg Jets had a day off yesterday. They'll get back at it in Vancouver, just because I like to say it like that. It's Vancouver. We're also going to delve into the Vegas home opener, talk some NHL, Major League Baseball playoffs. Matt Nichols back at practice with a special glove. We'll delve into that. We'll hear from head coach Mike O'Shea. We have two chances for you to qualify for hockey nights in Vegas. Speaking of Vegas, your NHL news and notes, an hour of your phone calls on the Boss Pizza fan line, Jared Clinton from the Hockey News, Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Jets, live from Vancouver, Darren Bombing from TSN 1290 on the Bombers, and Gus Katsaros. Jim Tolth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ricky with you. Gentlemen, how are we today?
Not too bad, taking advantage of this fantastic weather. Before the snow flies, I'll play baseball in the community and then back to watch some hockey. And got to love what Vegas is putting together here at 3-0.
3-0.
Yeah, everyone expected that, right?
This is you know what's scary about this to me is we all know what follows a heater in Vegas. Right?
A bender?
Maybe you go 3, 4, 5 in a row and then look out for the other side of the equation to smack you in the face when you go 0-for-12 and you're like the hot streak's going to be met by a cold streak. The cooler's going to walk out at some point.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I always feel like the heater always goes on and never ends. And for me, it took me 4 games to realize why I hate being a Flyers fan. So you got the goods in Vegas and whatever's going on with Dave Hackstall in Philly.
Hey, Mr. Patrick scored his first goal last night.
Yeah, and then Dave Hackstall crapped all over it. I'm not bitter.
Are you not a Dave Hackstall fan? Like, do you not like him as a coach?
I had my concerns before, and then I've never seen a coach in a sport actively take a victory away from his own team. I've never seen it. It happened.
Wow. That would do it, for sure. Let's start with the Vegas home opener last night. And the circumstances around this magnified this. As we were leading into this, the one thing, and Gary Lawless joined the afternoon ride yesterday with Hustler and Rick Ralph here on TSN 1290, and as Kevin Olszewski was talking about it, and it was getting closer to it actually happening, the balance of honoring and paying respects to what took place 9 days ago as of yesterday and sort of launching this new entity in the city of Las Vegas, it had to be such a big challenge.
Really? Because I think America's getting all too used to this. I mean, they've mastered this at this point in time with all the ridiculous and horrible tragedies we've seen down there. I don't think there is much, you know, I don't think that was a stretch to balance it like that. They pay great respect. Everyone is tuned in. And unfortunately, this is a film that has been seen far too often. It's just unbelievable, the world that we live in. But they did a good job of it. And, you know, hopefully the community, this maybe is some little tiny piece of the healing process going forward.
I thought they did an amazing job of sort of doing respectful things, but also celebrating and kicking something off that basically you wanted to be a party.
Yeah, you have to, I guess, strike that balance, right, of a somber note and then playing a hockey game after that. But, when it came to what you saw on ice and that whole atmosphere of it afterwards, because no one's going to say that they did a poor job on commemorating the victims, but it was a pretty cool place. Like it was a pretty neat atmosphere. You had the drums and the castle in the back corner of one end of the rink, and then you had that Noshek kid kick things off the right way with a goal early on. That it's a fun story right now. I don't know where it goes, but generally you just kind of see expansion teams wither out at the start and and there's not a whole lot of momentum going for them into the rest of the season, and they just kind of peter away to a last place or a second last place finish or something like that. But you kind of wonder if an expansion team and maybe this iteration of one gets hot and maybe strings together a couple of more wins. Just how far I wonder how far they can take this thing.
Best start to an expansion franchise ever at 3-0. They have played Dallas, who they scored two goals once Ben Bishop left, and then they've played Arizona twice. What do you make of this Vegas team?
Well, what's Fleury's save percentage? 970 or something like that? Right now, they've only given four goals against. To me, that was Gerard Gallant there. You knew that they would try and batten down the hatches, and they're scoring like, I'm not quite sure, James Neal might score 80 goals or something this year, right, with whatever pace he's on. But I think that the goal scoring will peter out for sure. But you know dang well, ultimately, Gerard Gallant's going to want to be a fairly tight team. And, hey, it's, you know, who's thinking that Marc-Andre Fleury or the goaltending situation down there is going to rip at the rate that it's at right now? But I think that they will be a tough out. I thought this all along, that Gallant will have them tuned in and that they'll be a scrappy outfit. You know, I don't expect them to make the playoffs, but I expect them to be a difficult win for other teams.
Yeah, I don't think they'll be like the Avs of last year, where you could basically just mark in the free spot on the bingo card and take your 2 points and leave. You're gonna have to earn everything against Vegas, which is all you can really ask for out of an expansion team, is to make life difficult against your opponents. The weird thing is, Vegas has their best forward and arguably their best defenseman in the minors right now. So, you're not even seeing the best outfit that they can dress because of what I really don't know what George McPhee is trying to do there, but it's kind of a shame that you don't get to see Vadim Shipachev and maybe what Shea Theodore could do in a top pairing role. So they're going to be eventually, you would think, better once they figure out their whole roster situation. I could see them kind of being in the mix in a couple of months, but like Troy said, to expect Marc-Andre Fleury to give you Vezina Trophy numbers for the rest of the season, and Malcolm Subban has never put up good numbers in pro hockey really anywhere. You know, you wonder at some point when the goaltending crumbles, they just won't have enough offense to eventually carry them as the season moves along.
Well, Elliot Friedman's 30 thoughts are coming out later this morning, as they usually do. But I was listening to the intermission on the broadcast last night, and he was saying that Vegas is very active right now on trying to unload some guys. The problem is the guys they don't want to unload are the guys that other teams want. Other teams are very interested in talking to him. George McPhee, he's very active, according to Elliot Friedman. But the other issue is, he said that all the other GMs in the league, and this sort of gets back to our Dustin Byfuglien talk yesterday, aren't deep enough on the blue line. He said the majority, the high percentage of GMs I've talked to, don't feel or don't like their total six defensemen. Or if they do, like the Nashvilles or the Calgarys or maybe even the Winnipegs, don't feel they're deep enough and would like to get another defenseman in case of injury, in case something happens. And his whole thing around the Vegas thing is there's a ton of teams looking to grab some of these D-men. It's just not the D-men Vegas wants to unload. And I'm just wondering how active this is going to be over the next 2 weeks to month going towards American Thanksgiving on sort of unloading some of these assets that they have.
If it was going to happen en masse, or like if you've got a bunch of defensemen no one wants, aren't you screwed? If nobody wants the guys you got and they don't feel that they're going to be able to help them, that sounds like, to me, what you're saying to me. So am I going to pick up guys that, I suppose somebody's got to be pretty decimated before they bring in guys that they don't think ultimately is going to do them much help.
Well, the flip side of that is, if I can't get the guy I want, am I still better grabbing the guy that they want to unload? Is it still better than what we have? And depth-wise, like Elliot seemed to think that there's not a lot of teams in the league that are happy with their D core and would like to add a piece or two, and he's the majority of the teams, he said.
Well, not much has happened yet, and everyone thought it was going to happen months ago, right? With all those defensemen they had.
Yeah, I just think he overplayed his hand. Mm-hmm. It was a strategy that was, I think, sound in theory, but just didn't work out. Didn't play out the way everyone thought it would. And I think at this point you have to cut your losses if you're George McPhee. And like, what are you waiting? Are you trying to get a fifth round pick instead of a sixth round pick for a guy like Griffin Reinhart? Like, is that worth having Shea Theodore and Vadim Shipachev away from the team for a couple of weeks? Is it worth trying to, you know, maybe grab a selection in 2019 for Clayton Stone? Like, you just have to look at what you have here and realize what you thought were pocket aces is more along the lines of a 2-7 off suit, and just cut your losses and get your best players onto your team here, because I don't think anyone anticipated a 3-0 start. And if you can get what you signed, what you originally had termed as your top line center and your first, second, third best defenseman, it kind of behooves you at this point to find a way to get those guys into the lineup, as opposed to, oh, I don't want to lose one of my number 7, number 8 defensemen for nothing on waivers. I'd rather get a pick for them. Like, you have to, at some point, you have to look at this and say, okay, what's the number one best thing for my hockey team? It's getting those two guys from the A into our lineup ASAP.
This is The Big Show on TSN 1290. Jim Troy and Brandon, 14 minutes past the hour. We're just talking about the home opener for the Las Vegas Golden Knights. The other thing that stood out to me, and some of the things I read yesterday about Vegas and listening to the NBC broadcast, was the owner, Bill Foley, has given the organization or expects to win a Stanley Cup or be in the Stanley Cup final in 6 years. And that's something we hear here all the time and have been for years, is how long do we have to wait? How long does it take? Bill Foley feels his organization and the team they've put together, he expects to be in the Stanley Cup final or winning the Stanley Cup in 6 years. Your thoughts on that, given the roster they have right now?
Well, a real competitive, solid playoff team, maybe 6 years window's pretty good. And depending on where they finish, like, can you add another real, you know, they got screwed this last round go in the lottery, right? And at 3-0 right now, they're not doing themselves any favor picking up high-end talent through the upcoming draft. So you just, a lot of that might, you know, and specifically when you're talking 6 years, a lot of that might have to do with, well, where do you finish this year and next? What level of talent are you going to be able to pick up out of the draft? So that'll play a key role, I think, in determining your future and road three, four years after that, right? So that's going to come into play. It's a lofty goal. It seems somewhat reasonable, I think, 6 years. It's important that fans down there that maybe aren't as well-versed in the time that it takes and the different type of business it is from a football team or other things like that, where with the contractual situation and all that sort of stuff. It's important that fans know the timeline, I think. All right, so Ken Holland said it takes, what, 8-10 years? He said, I think 8 years, he said, last year or the year before that, to build an organization to that point. So 6 years might be a little bit quick, but what's really important is that everyone knows it's an absolute process and it takes a lot of time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a bit lofty. And the other thing, too, is they have 8 UFAs coming up this year. So, I mean, you're talking about a third of your team that's not even likely to return. Like, they're going to have so many moving parts. This team will look nothing at all like the team they'll have next year. And if you're going to point to the 6 years, the three kids you drafted in the first round this year would be around 24 years old. I mean, you're basically asking to hit on every single one of those first rounders, maybe get a gem or two in the second, and then hit on your next year's first rounders as well. Like, you're asking for basic perfection in the draft, you know, over the first couple of years of your existence. I just think it's a bit too much. Maybe they go haywire in free agency one of these years and pick up a couple of pieces. And if they win the lottery this upcoming year, you get a guy like Rasmus Dahlin who can anchor your back end for the next 10 or 12 years. There's a lot of things that need to go their way, I think, for them to even have a consideration of contending for a cup in 6 years. But it sounds like a reasonable goal for the fan base, at least, right? Oh, yeah, 6 years, that's a fair amount of time. But in reality, I just don't know how pliable that is.
That's a long time. If you're a fan, and especially if you're new to the NHL, that's light years away.
Is it a better roster than when Atlanta came to Winnipeg?
Well, I think you would probably make the argument that it is. Well, when Atlanta came to Winnipeg.
Goalies were Chris Mason, Andre Pavlik.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's better. Where's the top end talent, really? The youth that's kind of unknown, but there's – yeah, I would say – I would say no.
We got a break, but better than – like, do they have a better start is what I'm saying, obviously, than when the Atlanta Thrashers came to Winnipeg.
That's a different situation, though, right?
They're not that far off. I mean, they had the three first-rounders as opposed to – the Jets just, you know, kind of having a normal draft class. But prospects-wise, Vegas didn't have a team. And prospects-wise, the two clubs are pretty similar, which is basically an indictment of the number two show that the Thrashers had to deal with their managerial crew.
We'll talk more hockey, get into the Jets. Paul Edmonds will join us live from Vancouver. Jared Clinton at the top of the hour. But up next, we'll talk Jets right now and in Vancouver as they get set to practice today. On The Big Show next, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290, and we'll hear from head coach Mike O'Shea and talk some Bombers at the bottom of this hour. We're going to get into the qualifying for the World Cup as well. Didn't go well for a couple countries, and it went extremely well for a country half the size of Winnipeg, the city, that is. We'll get into that as we go forward, but the Jets are in Vancouver, gentlemen. They had a day off yesterday. They'll get up and practice today. They'll take on the Vancouver Canucks tomorrow, who lost to the Ottawa Senators last night in overtime. And Alex Burrows was talking after the game about some of the chirps he heard in his first trip back to Vancouver. He said, just a little bit during warm-ups. They made fun of my haircut. I told one player he looked fat still. And we had a good time. So that must have been fun. Jets in Vancouver. We talked about it yesterday. And this healthy scratch, non-healthy scratch, lower body injury for Dustin Byfuglien. I guess it really depends on if he's back at practice today or not, on whether you sort of take the Jets at their word of if he's actually injured. And injured means like banged up. Could he go? Could he not go? Was this a decision to, he is injured, but he could have probably played, but we sat him down or however they.
I don't think it answers either way, right? If he skates today, he could have just been nicked up a little bit in theory and then okay now, I suppose. So, either way, it's going to be interesting and, like, really interesting as to whether or not I would – if I'm Paul Maurice, like, and you got what you got out of Tucker Poolman and things looked as sound and as solid there, you'd be real hesitant to mess with any of that. So that will be fascinating for sure.
Yeah, because – I mean, it is only one game, but Tucker Poolman passed it with flying colors. And it's clear at this point that I don't think he's going anywhere. Like, you get the sense that this team might dress eight defensemen for the time being moving forward here. We kind of assumed at some point that they would eventually send Poolman down to the Moose just to have him play 20-plus minutes a night, but I don't know. I'm not so sure that's going to be the case right off the bat because he moved into the lineup so seamlessly and he only played 14 minutes for sure, but he was right up there in terms of the most impactful defenseman that the Jets had. I didn't see a single mistake that he made all night long, and it was just real solid and steady and did everything you could ask of him. And I just wonder if I'm Paul Maurice. I don't know who you take out of the lineup, but I don't know how you can keep Poolman out of the lineup for very long either.
So if he's healthy, do you keep the roster the same and make him a healthy scratch?
Well, you're asking me what I would do, and there's I would, just to see even what we've got here, and I would. I mean, I believe I would anyway, unless hey, so because there's a. If he was injured and coming back, maybe, and he saw that the team played well without him, maybe that's what he needed to see to get settled in and start playing with far more attention to detail. If he wasn't hurt and it was a healthy scratch, although presented differently to the public, then that's the one sit down's probably all you're going to get in that situation to try and knock him back into the proper mindset. Anyway, so you know, I don't think there's going to be a long-term thing here with Dustin Byfuglien, right? If you were looking to whether it was a purposeful, healthy scratch or if it was just a one game being injured sort of thing, they want to get him in as quickly as it can. What they need from Dustin Byfuglien is the right mindset, right? So either way, hopefully missing a game like that, maybe that helps to get him into the proper mindset to see the guys that play a much more structured sort of situation in their own zone. Maybe that helps to reinforce what he needs to do. I'm not real sure, but you know dang well that they're not keeping Dustin Byfuglien out of the lineup for any length of time really whatsoever.
No, and it doesn't help any party in this.
Yeah.
No matter which way you look at it, whatever side of the fence that you're on this, it doesn't help the organization, doesn't help Dustin Byfuglien, doesn't help the team if he's sitting healthy for multiple games. So you got to put him back in. There's no doubt about that. And like Troy said, you know, maybe him watching and just, you know, whatever his, whether he was hurt or whether he was, you know, kind of a hush-hush type of thing, the one game would be more than enough to get your message across for sure. And if he doesn't get it after that, well, then you have to look at alternative scenarios.
And I think if it was even a lower body / hyphenated injury, healthy scratch, then you do have to put him back in just for that to see what you get back out of him. We'll find out today when they hit the ice for the morning skate. The situation at Dustin Byfuglien and the rest of the team. Paul Edmonds joins us at 7:30. Up next, we delve into the Blue Bombers and hear from head coach Mike O'Shea on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Gypsum Drywall Interiors present Caring for Kids. Support the staff and services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba today. You can text KIDS to 129090. Standard message rates may apply. Every time you do, Gypsum Drywall Interiors will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. Your actions can help the Children's Hospital keep caring for kids across Manitoba. Kids like Michaelia, who's currently battling cancer. For more on Caring for Kids, visit tsn1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon are with you on the Big Show, TSN 1290, 34 minutes past the opening hour. Royal Sports Power Hour coming up. Let's talk some Bombers, gentlemen, and specifically Mr. Matt Nichols on the field for practice yesterday wearing a glove on his hand that he seemed to have injured in the loss to Hamilton on Friday night. Here's head coach Mike O'Shea on Matt Nichols' status.
Yep, practice today. I didn't notice anything real negative at all, but as usual, we'll, with anybody that's nicked up a little bit, we'll talk to them tomorrow morning and see, you know, how they feel.
Here's head coach Mike O'Shea on if Nichols plays this Saturday when the Bombers host the BC Lions.
I mean, I give every player as much time as they need to tell me they can't, right? So, as usual, as I said, we'll... The big thing is how they feel tomorrow morning, right, after a day of practice.
What do you take from that? Does he go?
Oh, yeah. I have no doubt now that he goes. So that's just absolute tremendous news here for Bomber fans and for the team, and they can maybe go and put this whole, any concern that anyone might have that with the second place in the West, it's good to hear, too. And he was throwing the ball. The interesting thing to me was that the hand itself, whether the nail was gone, that people talk about the pain, some people... beak me a little bit when I call it like superficial pain. And what I mean by that is it's like if you have a bruise or a Charlie horse, you lose your nail. Like those are all forms of pain that you're not making the injury any worse by battling through the pain. If you have the mindset for it, right, and you can manage your pain threshold, then you can deal with the injury. It's not something that you're eroding or making worse as far as like you know going through something muscular, something that you're going to eventually tear or anything along those lines, something structural, for instance, as well. So if this is a pain issue, and he was looked real good before he ended up not coming back into that game, so I don't know if they ultimately just wanted to maybe get an X-ray or to verify like for me if the the doctors were concerned and thinking, hey, he might have something broken in his hand here. You're not going to send him back in that game, and you're going to get x-rays done and make sure that structurally he's okay. And so maybe that's what they did here. Now with the hand, it sounds like the pain sort of issues are things that he can manage well and move forward with. But we know he can throw well with his hand as it is right now once he gets warmed up, because he was still tossing it real well in that second quarter.
Yeah, the only thing I could think of that might have limited him would be if the finger or some part of the hand was swelling up and he was just having some trouble gripping the ball, maybe. But if he's out there throwing it like he did yesterday, then there really isn't much concern. Like, I think worst case, maybe it doesn't feel super great and he misses Saturday's game, but it doesn't sound at all like it's a long-term injury, which was kind of the main fear. I think the worst case would have been seeing him on the sidelines yesterday with the ball cap on, and it's maybe instead of a glove, it's a bit of a cast on his hand. But this is about as good as he could have hoped for the Bombers.
Yeah, it looks like he will go. The whole fingernail thing, whether he lost it or not, and I would I understand the finger, joints, hand, everything like that. I don't know how a fingernail would affect you throwing a football.
People say it hurts like H-E double toothpicks.
Yeah, that's the...
Just hurts like the Dickens. Like, so the guy that described it to me was like... and the guy was talking to me, has been through a little bit, and he was looked at me, you know, those penetrating, when someone can look you deep in the eyes to try and get a message across, he was like, it freaking hurts, man.
Somebody said to me, in World War II, the Japanese used to focus on the fingernails to get information. Yes,
mm-mm.
Because of the pain that comes with that, so... We're not going to do it to you, Brandon. Take it easy.
I'd be the worst. I would give up info right away. If you go to the fingernail, yeah, I'll tell you. Don't even touch my fingers.
That might be a question one day for the Boss Pizza fan line. What's your biggest fear of being damaged? Is it the fingernails?
Fingernails on an airplane. That's my fear.
Wow.
Fingernails on an airplane.
Basically
just
anything on an airplane. Either that,
something.
If a clown's somewhere in the back too, I'm out.
So we're like, tell us what Toth weighs. And you're like, no way. That's a Big Show secret. And they're like, well, we're going to take you up in a plane. And if you don't tell us then.
And I'll be like 170.
In grade 7. Continuing hearing from head coach Mike O'Shea. He talked about his defensive play on the weekend on Friday against Hamilton.
We didn't make enough plays to get off the field. You know, I thought there was a couple times where we made some plays and shot ourselves in the foot a little bit. That didn't happen as often as in maybe a couple other games, but this game we had a few more opportunities to make plays on what I would think were 50-50 balls that we should have made plays on. You know, we gave up a couple longer runs that we just made mistakes on, that we hadn't done that in a few. We thought we'd shored that up, but overall I would say it wasn't one thing or another. We just, that game was not a good game for us.
Yeah, it's those sorts of things happen sometimes. And I, you know, taking a step back and looking at, okay, that when this happened, if you were really going to get it taken to you, right, and you just laid an absolute dog, I suppose on your 14th game, it's from a timing standpoint, it's not bad to get punched in the mouth the way Andrew Harris said that they got, right? Like, it's the timing of it to recover from this and to start steamrolling, right? Like, I'd rather go into the playoffs suffering a humiliating loss like this than maybe, say, be on a, you win 11-12 or something like that, right? Or maybe like a 6-game win streak going into the playoffs. To me, a bit of a smack like that to get resettled and refocused and that much sharper, maybe ultimately it helps. But on the other side of that as well, the exposure of the defense here, the field goods, the feels that everyone got from Edmonton was like, woo, the defense has arrived. They're looking good. They're finally catching up to everything. Yeah, and that was like, that one got knocked down pretty good, right? So now it's back to, oh boy, this defense is the anchor and a real serious problem here going forward. And ultimately, as I said, coming into training camp, I think ultimately this is the kryptonite and the anchor and what's going to hold this team back. And really, that's okay, right? In their development, of a team, an organization. Like they're coming along real nice. They're not. It's not likely that the special teams, offense, defense, everything's going to be gelling at the same point. And all of a sudden, you got this crazy tsunami of a football team and the Bombers all coming together. It makes sense that you're still going to be a couple pieces short right now. Those pieces are on the defensive side of the ball, and unfortunately, the Calgary Stampeders, from a defensive standpoint, have been stronger than at any time I can remember during the last 25 years that Calgary has been really strong. This is the best their defense has ever looked.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and the other thing, too, is, you know, kind of flippantly, do you want to be at your peak as an organization right now with the way Calgary's playing, with the way their roster is set up? Like, in a weird
Jets
way.
Jets Oilers 1.0.
Yeah, like, maybe you want to gear up for next year and just kind of take this one off. But, yeah, it's... I would rather the defense just play solidly than worry about win streaks and whatever the record is going into the playoffs, because that's – Troy's right. It's not if it's going to hold them back. It's what will hold them back. The offense has had no they've had no real bump in the road outside of the Nichols injury. When everyone's on the field, they've been the best offensive unit in the CFL. It's just the defense isn't anywhere up to snuff. And it's really lagging behind the offense, and it's what's going to hurt them.
I heard that a lot from some fans over the weekend saying, well, better now, and better not, like, better now, better than four games from now, even to end the regular season, going into the playoffs. Like, it seems to be that people don't mind three or four games before the end of the regular season to sort of not play well, and that, as we're mentioning, the, you know, quote-unquote punch in the mouth to wake up. Darren Bobbin here from TSN 1290 and CFL 60, and of course, our Manuk Dentre Blue Bomber Game Day, which will be on the air with Westwood and Chris Walby and Mr. Bobbin Saturday at 1 to tee up the battle at IGF with the Lions and the Bombers. Had this exchange with head coach Mike O'Shea on asking about the pain tolerance and trying to get into exactly how Matt Nichols' hand is feeling.
I think these guys are all tough guys. I don't think they have problems with that. Like,
We're talking about a throwing hand on a quarterback, right?
Yeah. I mean, he seemed to function pretty well today. So, I guess I don't understand the question. I mean, is he gonna take a needle? Is that what you're asking?
Or no. I'm asking if managing pain in a quarterback's throwing hand is something significant. If it's.
I've never played quarterback except in grade 9, so I don't know, and I didn't get hit.
Okay.
So, yeah. I think he's going to be fine, and I think he's a tough guy. I think he's been in positions before where every guy out there has played through something. Most guys out there right now are playing through nicks and bumps and bruises, and you don't hear a peep out of them. You know, they'd love to take the field with their teammates, so.
One day we're going to wake up, and it's going to be a headline that Mike O'Shea has eaten Darren Bombing, and we're all going to go, you know what? We knew it was going to happen. Rest in peace, DB. You can just feel. You can literally feel Mike O'Shea pulling the reins back of taking whatever action here. And some of those questions, Bombing just said, they go, well, we're talking about a quarterback in his hand here, Mike, right? Like.
I guess I don't understand the question, which is great.
He's a brave man. Darren Bowman's a brave man.
Walby and O'Shea, no fear. Maybe not the brightest
thing.
People to go up against, but hey, no fear.
The same thing to Walby in here, and I'm just staring at him. And when we first started, he wouldn't even look at Walby, so it just, you know, aware of that whole thing and taking Walby on all the time now, standing 2 feet away from O'Shea and these things. This is beautiful.
To be fair, is that a question for Matt Nichols rather than Mike O'Shea? I guess O'Shea would know, though. Like, O'Shea would be saying, like, how does it feel? How this?
Yeah, and that's like the whole pain tolerance and battling through that. Some guys are good at it and other guys aren't. You know, the guys that aren't are called thoroughbreds, right? Like, and the guys in the locker room talk about those guys. Right, so the guys that can battle through stuff like that, those are the guys you want a whole mountain full of those guys in that locker room. The guys that don't manage pain tolerance, and everybody in the locker room knows when it's a pain that you're not making anything any worse by enduring it. So you got to suck it up here, man, and we need you out there. So you have to do whatever you got to do. You got to take whatever you got to take to get out there on the field with us. And when it's the quarterback on top of everything – that you know is hurt, and he's out there along the line, say, of a Matt Dunnigan, right, thrown through separated shoulders and things like that. Like, guys love that level of leadership, and I have I have no doubt that Matt Nichols here answers the bell and leads in that manner.
Mike O'Shea was also asked if he ever thinks or considers resting players prior to the playoffs. If you solidify that playoff spot, there's a game or two to go. Would you consider resting some players to make sure they're healthy for the playoff game?
I think it's too soon for that kind of thought. And I'm not so sure I even think that way. I think you play your lineup. I mean, I guess my opinion could change, but right now on the spot here, you play your lineup right through, really, is what I believe.
I've never liked it. I understand why coaches, and hey, if guys are banged up, that's a little bit different. But if guys are healthy and a unit is operating at a high level, giving an extra week, sometimes two off, can really slow things down. And then you're looking to get that back early in the games when you come back. So typically, I'd rather just, there's risk involved inherent in playing guys in games that don't have any bearing on what's about to happen in the next couple of weeks with playoffs. But the whole other flip side of that is keeping everything operating at a high level and that sort of thing. And that's always been the mindset that I've preferred.
And finally, here's head coach Mike O'Shea, if he's given any thoughts to today's CFL trade deadline.
Kyle would spend a lot more time thinking about it than I would. And if there was something interesting, I'm sure he would present it to me. If I had an issue, that I wanted to talk about or something we thought we needed to address, I would go to him. But right now, it's not. I don't really see anything on the horizon.
Yeah, and that for sure is Kyle Walter's job. And you wonder, there are some spots on the roster that people would probably like to see improved, and mostly on the defensive side of the ball. And I just think that it's too late, probably. And really, like when you're talking, the left side of the secondary early on was of fairly considerable concern, but I'm not sure that's the case anymore. And if anyone out there, if Sam Hurl pops to your mind, at that middle linebacker position this late in the season for what is the quarterback year defense, I don't see anything happening there either. So expect for the most part or completely entirely the same group going forward here into the playoffs.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll delve into some soccer and, of course, the baseball playoffs postponed yesterday. We'll get some thoughts next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Jim Till, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. We'll talk some baseball in just a moment, but World Cup qualifying wrapping up. And earlier in the week, the Netherlands will not be going to the World Cup. They failed to qualify.
Robin!
And Iceland! Iceland has qualified after doing so well at the Euro Cup, a country.
How many teams copy that thing now?
Huh? Oh, it's pretty awesome. But
I saw
it's
what
sad.
Country was it yesterday? I think France was doing it yesterday.
Oh, come on.
And of course, in the MLS, you see it all the time. Yeah.
Sacre bleu.
Vancouver. A country half the size of the city of Winnipeg, Iceland.
Twice the size.
Twice the size. Yeah,
half the population, I think, is
half the population.
Trinidad,
yeah.
Tobago? You're talking?
No.
Okay,
Iceland.
Okay, sorry.
Iceland's population is half the population of Winnipeg.
It's probably, you might be right about the size, too.
And they have qualified for the World Cup of Soccer.
I thought you were talking about Trinidad and Tobago that's got like twice the population of Winnipeg, and they ended up beating the USA yesterday.
Meera Bahadasingh, one of our city's finest, former reporter here in the city, is very excited. She's from Trinidad and Tobago. However, they beat the U.S. 2-1 yesterday, and for the first time since 1986, the United States soccer program, which is highly funded, has not qualified for the World Cup. Here's ESPN's Taylor Twellman and former U.S. soccer team member himself on what this means.
If this failure does not wake up everyone from U.S. soccer to Major League Soccer, from pay to play to broadcasters to everything, then we're all insane. Because the definition of insanity is doing the exact same thing, knowing the result.
Love it.
And if we don't change it, and I mean we, everyone in U.S. soccer, then what are we doing? What's the point? Because that should have never happened with the $1 billion plus that is going into Major League Soccer and youth development. That should have never happened, and it did, and every single person should look themselves in the mirror. And by the way, that's including myself. Yeah, I'm part of U.S. Soccer.
We're all involved
in this. I played for the program. It's embarrassing.
I don't know about the host being involved in the program just by hosting soccer coverage. However, this is highly, highly embarrassing for the U.S. national program.
Oh, yeah. And none of the women have spoken out yet from the ladies. And you wonder if at some point in time they make a decision to unleash or get into the couple of wobbly pops and maybe put something on Twitter that they shouldn't. But I saw the percentage chance of the U.S. not getting in with what needed to transpire yesterday was at 3%. Like it was – they so if they lost, then – the situation with Honduras and Panama, both would have to lose or draw to Mexico and Costa Rica, who are both underdogs in those situations, but both Honduras and Panama win, and then, of course, the USA loses. And the way the games were all breaking down at the same time, right? Like, people going to the American bench and saying, like, there's 5 minutes left. You got, I think it was 5 minutes of injury time. You guys have to score here to get in, right? And just the overall, like, the lack of bite to the team. And Michael Bradley's being held here as captain for, like, where were you? Where was the level of passion needed? And the not much splash or pizzazz with this team, like no real bite up front. Other teams just more could park the bus on them defensively, and they couldn't break through. There's really no strong power to the team. It's Altidore out there wasn't able to get anything going as well. So just an incredible disappointment for. And I spoke to someone, a friend of mine who's well connected within the Canadian soccer program, and I asked him, why is there such remarkable underperformance here by the American men's team? And he said it's because they can't decide on their identity. He said they've tried to copy different countries and approaches and programs, and said they can't decide on what's American, sort of thing. So it's the impact here is going to be interesting. And it's ever since, like, for how long now? Even when they were qualifying for World Cups, they were disappointing and underachieving,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
So this is kind of like dropping a bomb on the entire program, and you wonder just how fundamental the change will be.
I don't know, but it's awesome. I love it. Any time American sports teams, yes. And maybe just the men, maybe just watching the men suffer is something I can get down with. And like, to not qualify through CONCACAF, it's one thing to not make noise in the World Cup, but to lose to some of the countries that they lost to, it's beyond an embarrassment. It's a shameful, pitiful, pathetic display, and it makes me so damn happy. And how about Messi and Argentina getting in by the skin of their teeth, too?
Yeah.
Needed a hat trick there.
Who was the it was Alexi Lalas about 2
yeah,
weeks ago?
Yeah, he went on the
up
rant
and
too.
Down. Like, so how,
well,
how much
these are guys
how
that
further
laid,
along cemented is what he said about this group?
These are guys that laid the groundwork to get the program to where it is. So it is funded so highly, and it is developed this way, and to see it fall apart is... Like, I'm this hard over the years on the Canadian national program, but by no means do they have the money going into their program that the U.S. do and everything else they have. So it is a massive
nor
story
the population,
down south.
Right?
USA Today called it the worst disappointment in U.S. sports history. Of them not qualifying for the World Cup. We'll take a break. Royal Sports Power Hour next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The Royal Sports Power Hour on The Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Jets, will join us live from Vancouver at the bottom of the hour. NHL news and notes, your chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas. And there's two baseball playoff games today. One was rained out or weather delayed till today between the Cubs and the Nationals. We'll get the guys' thoughts on that as well. And we're going to talk some more hockey in our next segment, which is brought to you by Olympic Homes. And it is with Mr. Jared Clinton from the Hockey News. Jared, how are you today?
not too bad about yourself.
Good, thanks. Thanks for joining us. And we talked about it at the start of the show, and just get your opinion on sort of the launch of hockey in Vegas last night and all the ceremonies that went on to sort of honor those lost in the tragedy, injured, and then also to kick off hockey in Vegas itself.
Yeah, I think it was just amazing to watch, wasn't it? You know, the way they did the ceremony, you know, having the first responders come out, having both the Coyotes and the Golden Knights line up behind those first responders and really putting the spotlight on the people who, you know, who kind of were on the front lines of what happened, you know, the terrible attack in Las Vegas that past week. So I just think, you know, the ceremony and the way they kicked it off, it couldn't have been more perfect. You know, it was the perfect response from that franchise, and it's a really good start for them, you know, to take those steps and do something like that right out of the gate. You know, unfortunate circumstances, of course, but just a beautiful way to kick it off for that team. And you know, the on-ice performance, you know, you mentioned storybooks sometimes, and I don't think it could have gone much better for the Golden Knights, you know, the on-ice aspect of it. You know, you kind of jokingly say the roof was going to blow off the place, but when they scored those first three goals, it was incredible, the noise in there. You know, you watch that game and you just think, you know, maybe we kind of judge things too quickly here in thinking that this was going to take a while to get off the ground, because, you know, as far as opening nights go, that was pretty impressive. And overall, the franchise is just kind of, you know, given the league a shot in the arm a little bit to start the season. And I think it's been really, really fun to watch them play. Especially because we didn't expect much, you know, and they've kind of produced a lot of excitement so far.
Jared, I don't believe we spoke to you since the Nikolaj Ehlers deal went down. Your thoughts on that deal, both for Ehlers and for the team as well?
Yeah, that's an incredible deal, like a masterstroke from Cheveldayoff again. You know, right now maybe it looks like $6 million a year is perfect worth for Ehlers, but I think everybody who watches them sees the growth that's coming. And has seen the growth over the past couple of years. And it just seems like in 1 or 2 years, that's one of those contracts that everyone's going to say, you know, remind me again how Cheveldayoff managed to pull that off for $6 million a year. And I think it's, you know, the sky's kind of the limit with Ehlers. You know, I think offensively, he's got so much more to give. And I think we're starting to see that a little bit too. You know, it took him a while maybe to get started this season. It took three games for him to score his first goal, but he scored three of them in that game. So, I just, as a player, I think he's exactly the kind of guy that's going to be one of the next, you know, underrated stars in the league. So for my money, that's one of the better deals that we'll see signed maybe all season, value-wise. And I think that's the big thing for the Jets right now is, you know, getting contracts like that are good value. And I think Cheveldayoff recognized if he did it now instead of doing it maybe in the middle of the season or late season, he's going to save himself some money on that long term, and I think that's where the term and the value of the contract really comes into play, as far as it being kind of team friendly in the future, because you know the Jets have to worry about what's going to happen financially in the next few years, especially with the, you know, the sheer volume of free agents they have coming up with new contracts due as early as next summer. So, you know, from a player perspective, that's a great deal for Ehlers to sign. You know, it is good value for him right now. I think long-term outlook, though, you know, the Jets are kind of winning on the side of getting the better value of the deal.
He gets a hat trick and an assist days after signing that new contract. Spotlight's always on players when they get that. You have a great piece out on the Hockey News about players facing some pressure, including Josh Anderson of Columbus. But on the list also, guys who need to prove themselves this year is Jets goalie Connor Hellebuck. Give us your thoughts on him and why he's on that list in your article you put out.
Yeah, I think, you know, last year the expectations on Hellebuck were high, and I think everyone can readily admit that he didn't live up to those expectations. I think Hellebuck himself would even admit, you know, last year wasn't what he expected, and it wasn't what anybody expected. And I think, you know, when you're a young goaltender like that and you're expected to be the future of the franchise, I think it's disappointing for both him and probably for the fans of the organization that the team had to go out and acquire another goaltender. You know, this wasn't a situation that anybody really expected. Nobody expected Steve Mason to be a guy who was being brought in this season. And I think for Hellebuck, you know, he has a lot to prove insofar as he wants to show that, you know, maybe that was a misstep. You know, they didn't need to bring in Mason, and that really Hellebuck could have carried the load this year, and last year was just, you know, a blip on the radar, an aberration statistically for him. And I think, you know, he really wants to show that he can be that number one guy. And I think that's what he should be wanting to do this season. I think he should be trying to, you know, in maybe gentler terms, but just, you know, realistically shove this kind of down the Jets' throats and say, you know what, look, you didn't need to bring Mason in. I can do this. I can handle this. And I think for him, he obviously got off to a good start, the other night in Edmonton, but I really think as far as this season goes, and for his future, this is maybe the biggest year he's going to have, because he needs to really prove that he has a future in Winnipeg, because if he doesn't, there's going to start to be some rumblings about whether or not, you know, he needs to be kind of shuffled down the depth chart, and maybe Eric Comrie's the next guy. So I think he has a lot to really show this year, and I think he's off to a good start, and, you know, we can only hope it continues for him.
Jared, it's real early, but there's 15 teams in the NHL averaging three or more goals per game. Your thoughts on the amount of goal scoring that we're seeing?
Yeah, every season at the start of the year, it seems we see a little bit of an uptick. So I'm not trying to get too excited about it myself, but it really seems like the impact that the power plays have had, and just the amount of change kind of the game has undergone in one summer. I think everyone's realizing, you know, we're not getting away, the players are understanding we're not getting away with as much, stick work. And that's kind of opening up some more room for the skill players. And I think we are seeing, you know, times when maybe there would have been a slash or a little bit of tap on the hands or a small little hook that maybe the players would get away with. And that's not really happening anymore. And that is kind of, you know, injecting some offense into these games. I think there's also, you know, it's happened twice already. Maybe more than that. I missed one or two, but last night especially, we saw one of those offside challenges go to, you know, a penalty right after, and we see an extra goal. So, you know, the lack of challenges and kind of the deterrent the league has put in there has kind of, you know, it's made those plays at the line not fall under scrutiny so often, and I think it's kind of made coaches a little bit gun shy with the challenges. So we're seeing less goals that are maybe contested that could have been or maybe would have been called back. So that's definitely helping. Add a little bit of offense too, but I think the real reason more than anything is we see this at the start of every season, just because guys are getting back in game shape. You know, some players, you know, they aren't, you know, perfectly game ready yet. And I can't remember who I was reading, but somebody said, you know, look at the season in 10 game sections. And that's kind of how you look at it, because in the second 10 game section, we'll probably see these goals, you know, the average goals per game take a little dip, but you know, that's kind of to be expected, because 15 teams, as you said, with more than three goals per game is way higher than I think anybody could have, fathomed would happen at the start this year.
Vegas is off to a 3-0 start, and Bill Foley was saying this week that, or when he got the team and when they went through the expansion draft and everything else and George McPhee assembled it, that he's giving the franchise or expects the franchise to be in the Stanley Cup final or winning it within 6 years. Is that realistic with this roster and where they sit right now?
I don't think so. I think the better theory is that of George McPhee, and that's, you know, build from the draft and build through the draft and kind of hope that, you know, this team can be a competitive, consistent Stanley Cup, not Stanley Cup contender, but playoff contender in maybe 5 years. And I think that's a more realistic goal for the franchise. It's always great, of course, to kind of put those, you know, those far-fetched goals in front of you, you know, the horse and the carrot. So that's a good thing to have for the Golden Knights. But I think realistically, we're not looking at a situation where in 6 years, this is going to be a team that's going to be in the final. A lot of these players who are under contract right now are going to be gone. Well, it's not fair to say a lot, but there's a significant number who are available for free agency at the end of the year. And you have to wonder how many of these guys who realistically, they didn't choose to be in Vegas. They were chosen to go to Vegas. So, there'll be some players who want to get out of there, who want a better situation for themselves or want a different situation for themselves. So there could be a few guys who leave at the end of the year. And then you consider, you know, how long it takes guys, you know, some drafted prospects can be in the NHL, you know, right out of the gate, but other guys are going to take 2 to 3 years to develop. And, you know, especially defensemen and goaltenders, we're probably looking at a scenario where, you know, their starting goaltender, whoever their number one in the future is, probably hasn't even been drafted yet and probably won't be around until, you know, the fifth year of this 6 year plan. So I think we're looking at, you know, maybe closer to a decade is when this will really start to be a team that is competing for the Stanley Cup. Anything can happen. Of course, we saw it with the Panthers, when they expanded, you know, so many years back, but It just seems unrealistic to put that kind of expectation on the Golden Knights in such a short time frame.
Jared, what have you thought about the defensive display put on by the Winnipeg Jets up to this point in time?
Yeah, it hasn't been pretty, has it? Those first two games, it's just small lapses. It seems like at times they've got everything under control, and then, you know, there'll be a lapse or two, and it just ends up in the back of the net. And, you know, the hope always is that if you make a mistake or two, your goaltender can bail you out. And this isn't to put any of the blame on Steve Mason or Connor Hellebuck, because I think a lot of the goals they've allowed this year, you know, haven't really been their fault, per se. And I think it's just the mistakes that they've been making, the mistakes that the Jets have been making, are of the kind where, you know, there's really no chance for the goaltender once the mistake's been made. So I think it's just one of those things where they need to tighten up. How they'd go about doing it, it's hard to say. It just seems like some of the mistakes that have followed this team for the past couple of years are following them once again. And you hope it's not coaching, because Maurice just got the extension. But, you know, something needs to change for this team to get stronger defensively. And it's still early in the season, but if things continue this way, you really have to wonder what it is that, you know, is the detriment to this team defensively.
Great stuff, Jared. We appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Jared.
Bye. Jared Clinton of the Hockey News in this segment was a presentation of Olympic Homes Ready to Move Specialists. Tour their homes in person or online at olympichomes.ca. Your first chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas here on The Big Show is next on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
You heard the man, 780-1290, 12th caller through. As TSN 1290 and RedTech.ca present Hockey Nights in Vegas, we're sending five lucky listeners. We have three grand prize winners, and we still need to get another two taking their guests as well to Las Vegas this November, where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Vegas Golden Knights Friday, November 10th at T-Mobile Arena. Part of the prize includes return airfare to and from Las Vegas, free parking at Winnipeg Richardson International Airport, courtesy of Park and Fly, two hockey tickets, the Jets versus Golden Knights on November the 10th at T-Mobile Arena. And if you saw the first game at T-Mobile Arena last night, the arena looks spectacular, brand new. Four nights accommodation on the Strip and $1,290 in cash to help cover a few extras during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays at 7:15 a.m. and 8:15 a.m. right here on The Big Show, 12:15 p.m. with Kevin Olszewski on the Don Vito Roundtable, and 5:15 p.m. on the Afternoon Ride with Hustler and Rick Ralph. And you can also watch for bonus chances to qualify online. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show. Next grand prize announcement coming up October 23rd and November 6th. For more information, check out TSN1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas, presented by RedTag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals, and us here at TSN 1290. 780, 12th caller through. How good did that T-Mobile Arena look last night on TV?
Looked pretty sharp.
Outstanding facility.
About as sharp as Shea Knighty did in the picture floating around Twitter yesterday.
High stepping shoes on.
What was that
Those
about?
Are high. He needed a walking stick.
He's got some sort of musical gig after he does the hockey game, or what?
At Shane Knighty on Twitter, if you want to check it out. He needed a walking stick with like a Golden Knights helmet emblem on the end
goblet,
of it.
Yeah.
A jeweled goblet to go with it, as Hustler's
might,
been known
might
to
have
rock.
All that.
He might. Who's our 12th caller through?
It's Lenny Blackburn.
Lenny Blackburn!
Hello, how are you, sir? Morning. Hi.
How are you?
We're fantastic now. Thank you very much.
Yeah, just for qualifying today, you get a Jets Gear gift card, so you're already a winner, and we'll put you in for a grand prize draw. Have you ever been to Vegas?
I'm 40 years old, and I've never been to Vegas. It's a sad existence that I live. So,
well, then you're born again. You're like 18 right now, or 21 on your way to could be on your way to Sin City. Do you know who you'd be taking with you? Should you be one of our grand prize winners?
Well, the safe answer would be to take the wife, but if she happens to work that weekend, that wouldn't be the worst thing either. So,
if the schedules don't align, honey, what do you want me to do? I didn't book the prize at this weekend. Yeah. I can't help you. Lenny, we wish you all the best of luck in our next two grand prize draws. You're in for both of them on October 23rd. If you don't win that one, your name will also be in the November 6th draw. Keep listening to TSN 1290. We'll draw for those on the 23rd and the 6th. Congratulations, and enjoy the Jets Gear gift card.
Thank you very much.
Good luck, man.
Thank you.
Lenny Blackburn, our latest qualifier, will do it again at 8:15 right here on the Big Show on the Don Vito Roundtable at 12:15 and 5:15 on the afternoon ride here on TSN 1290. Paul Edmonds coming up at the bottom of the hour. Before we get to that, gentlemen, the Washington Nationals Chicago Cubs game was postponed due to the weather. They'll play at 3 o'clock Central Time today in Chicago with the Cubs trying to end that divisional series up 2-1. We didn't talk about this yesterday. Dusty Baker and his managing skills have been questioned several times. Max Scherzer was in the 6th inning, gave up a walk or a hit, had a guy on first.
It's the 7th.
The 7th, I thought it was 6th. Yeah, 7th, yeah. And Dusty Baker comes out and says, I'm making a change. And Scherzer says, no, you're not. And he says, yeah, I am. He goes, no. Literally, he saw Max Scherzer go, no. And then Dusty Baker, like,
the mound, right?
He looked around with that toothpick, yeah. And he's like, I don't know what to do, but I made the call. Yeah. And so then Scherzer left. And, of course, the Cubs go on to win that game. Who do you have today? And do you believe in Dusty Baker? I don't trust a man who leaves his infant child, not infant, but 3-year-old, near home plate during a playoff game. However,
it's because you don't like kids, man.
Wow. Did the kid pay to be there? Did he pay a ticket? What are your thoughts today on the Cubs and Nationals? Who wins this?
Well, and the big talk is the starting pitcher, right?
Yeah, Rourke event against
instead of Strasburg.
Instead of Strasburg, who's got the sniffles or something, like he's not feeling well.
Because of the mold in Chicago.
Like, really, dude.
The mold and the wetness.
We're talking about Matt Nichols playing through certain things to, you know, and what that does to inspire group. And you got Strasburg here who's down because he's under the weather a little bit and not available because he's under the weather. I got to be honest. I'm cheering for the Cubs here, but honestly, boys, I wasn't even aware there was another game tonight.
Yankees, go Indians
Yankees.
Go tonight.
No. Yeah, yeah, go Yankees. No. Take care of the Cleveland Whiteys. Or no, sorry, the Indians. I didn't mean to offend anyone with that.
Yeah, I'm out on the Nationals. I'm out. If Steven Strasburg, I'm sorry, but if you, I know Scherzer's the ace, but if a guy who was sent in to save your franchise when he was picked number one can't pitch because he's not feeling 110%,
So who we got? We got to break. Nationals, Cubs.
Well, I'm cheering for the Cubs. Just the Cubbies. How don't
so
you
they'll end
the
it?
Cubs?
What do you think?
Cubbies end it.
I say it goes another one. I say it goes to 5. Yankees, Indians, Cleveland has Kluber, New York has Sabathia. Who do you got?
The Yankees take down the Whiteys.
All rise, and then sit your ass down, because Cleveland's going on.
Yeah.
Cleveland Aaron Judge is hitless, too. How about that, Troy?
Cleveland is going on.
What, tonight?
Oh, yeah.
No, wash your mouth out. So.
Paul Edmonds is next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back on the Big Show, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and the Royal Sports Power Hour. Your NHL news and notes are still to come. Did you guys see Vince Neil at the Golden Knights game last night?
That was pretty cool, huh?
Sitting there with his flow and his hat on and some lady friend in his ear while the game was going on. A lot of celebrities going to be at those games in Vegas. Vince Neil's just one of them. How big of a celebrity? I don't know.
Who's the most popular Neil in Vegas right now? Is it the real deal or is it Vince Neil?
It's got to be the real deal.
It got to be.
I would argue that it's been James Neal for about 3 years now over Vince Neal, even though Vince Neal probably lives in Vegas. It's time now to talk with the voice of the Winnipeg Jets here on TSN 1290, Mr. Paul Edmonds. And this segment with Paul is brought to you by Goche Chevrolet on McPhillips, where for the month of October, get 0% financing on most new vehicles and get a Vegas vacation for two included. Goche Chevrolet, 1400 McPhillips at Inkster. Mr. Edmonds, how are you today?
Not bad. Not bad at all. Unfortunately, the way things have shaped up here in the hotel rooms, both in Edmonton and in Vancouver, they have not shown any of those Vegas games. And of course, the Vancouver game here was blacked out last night. So unless you had it on your computer or you were in a bar or you were at the game itself, you weren't watching any of the Canucks. And I didn't see much, of course, of the Las Vegas game, but certainly was following through social media, and I guess they had just a phenomenal night, and the organization and the team did a great job of exposing themselves for being very professional in leading up to the game, and then certainly the win too at 4-1. So congratulations to everybody involved, and a great night for the city considering what happened just over a week.
Sounds like a lot of excuses, Paul, for what you did last night then.
Oh, I got a million of them, Jimmy. I wrote the book on excuses.
I tried to get a toaster and it wouldn't work, so I had to go to this bar.
Hey, Paul, we were talking yesterday, and of course the big portion of the conversation directed at the Jets in the first couple of games was all defensive, and somehow it morphed into the breeding ground here of some of the things come up with, where all really you need to ask from the Jets here is that they put the D in decent, because they're going to be pretty strong offensively, and we're not looking at, you know, Fort Knox in the back that needs to be created here for the Jets. The boys just need to play at a decent level, and the structure that was maintained in that game against Edmonton was welcomed big time.
Well, it sure was, especially when you're probably playing against the most dynamic player in the National Hockey League now in Connor McDavid. And I thought that one of the best guys defensively in the game was the captain, Blake Wheeler. I thought he made some great defensive plays and was exemplary in his play away from the puck and certainly in his own zone. And everybody else just followed after that. It was a simple simplification of the game. Do your job. Do it well. Don't worry about what the guy's doing beside you, and don't try, if he makes a mistake, to recover for him, thereby compounding the mistake that you're making by getting yourself out of position. And it also starts with the fact that you had a goaltender that was big. He was boring. He made the first save. His rebound control was excellent, and therefore you were able to, because you were in your position, get the loose puck, whether it was a 50-50 or if it bounced right to you, and then make a play there and get position and possession. So, you know, they did a lot of things right. They kind of pulled back. They simplified the game a little bit. They had some leadership that really showed them the way, if you will. And as a result, I thought that Edmonton certainly was the better team, or tried to exact their will on the Winnipeg Jets on the first 10 or 15 minutes of the game. But after that, when Winnipeg found their feet underneath them, I thought they were the better team for the majority of the hockey game. And it really started, you're right, with a few adjustments, not that major, but just a little bit more commitment, a little bit more of a mental commitment to playing defense and away from the puck and being a little bit more positionally sound. And that's what started certainly an opportunity for them to go on to win their first game, which they did. And kind of a go and do it in a convincing fashion, as they did against Edmonton the other night.
Paul, in your mind, how key was that timeout that Paul Maurice called in the second period after being scored on by the Oilers, 2 goals in 40 seconds? And do you know what the message was?
Well, you know, in talking to some people, you know, I'm not breaking anybody's trust. The message was not that Paul called the timeout. So I'll answer your second part first, to yell and scream and bark. Apparently he was very calm and was kind of soothing to his team. Said, okay, listen, we've been here before. This is the part that's got us in trouble. Everybody just take a breath. Everybody just relax. We're going to not hit the panic button here. We're going to hit the reset button here. So it was just to allow everybody to get focused again. And I thought it was a brilliant timeout at that point. You know, you sometimes can save your timeout for the strategy play with a minute to go or 30 seconds or 2 minutes. But that timeout at that point, at that juncture of the game, I thought was a real, real smart move by a longtime coach in the National Hockey League that could see that things were unraveling again and didn't want to get to the point where for the third straight game in the same spot in a game that his team was going to watch the game get away from them. So he called the timeout. Even if they don't score the two goals after that, it's still the exact point where you needed to do something like that to get the game to a tie situation or keep it at a tie situation to the third period. As a result, they responded, and I think that's the big word here, they responded with two goals after that, and wouldn't you know it was the top line again. And they had a 4-2 lead after two periods and, quite frankly, were in control of the game. And then they could just really kind of recoil into some more of a defensive structure in the third period to preserve that lead, add on with a power play goal late, and, of course, the natural hat trick by Nikolaj Ehlers. But I thought that it was a very poignant move by Paul Maurice at that point to call the timeout, well used for sure.
With whatever is ailing Dustin Byfuglien, the play of Tucker Pullman allows them to not give Dustin Byfuglien the time needed to get back to 100%.
Well, it certainly, Westy, gives them options. And he did not look out of place. And if he had any nerves whatsoever, by about the fourth shift of the first period, when he's jumping up into the rush, I even made mention of it, the fact that obviously he's not really that nervous. He's getting up the ice here. But that's part of his game as well. So the options are he can play on the right side for you, he can play on the left side for you, and you can plug and play him right now and feel the confidence not only to play him and certainly play him in a few different situations, but maybe move him up certainly on the depth chart and give him a few more minutes than you might normally have thought that he was going to command. You know, we shouldn't be surprised by this gentleman. He has pushed himself in that lineup since game number two of the preseason. He didn't play in game one. They put him in game two, and then right from there, he forced them to make a decision on him every single night after that. And he played in six straight preseason games, six of the seven. And the only reason he didn't play in all seven was because he wasn't scheduled to play in game one, so he sat out. And now he's forced himself into the lineup, even ahead of Ben Sherratt, the veteran defenseman on the back end that's waiting for his opportunity to get in. I didn't think that Tucker Pullman did himself anything wrong with the way he played. He was defensively sound. He moved the puck. He got rocked pretty good by Milan Lucic, yet kind of shook that off probably three-quarters or halfway through the game. I just really like the way the kid is playing. He's playing with a maturity and a poise that I think you might expect from a 24-year-old. But certainly not from a guy that's never played a professional hockey game leading up to the other night in Edmonton. Sure, he's played a lot of junior hockey and then certainly getting to UND and college Division One. But there's a big jump from that, as we all understand, from Division One hockey in the Midwest and across the United States up into professional hockey. And he skipped a step. He didn't even go to the AHL. He went right to the National Hockey League. This guy's a real good one, I think, for the Winnipeg Jets. It's a reason why I think they were clamoring to get him signed, and they didn't want to lose him. August 1st is one of those free agents that have been a flight risk historically the last few years in the National Hockey League. And now they're going to have to see where he fits in, but I don't think they have any worries about if somebody gets hurt, can't go, even if it's Dustin Byfuglien again coming up tomorrow in Vancouver, whether they can just plug and play him again and feel very confident about the game that he's going to deliver for the team on the back end.
We won't know for sure till they take the ice today for practice in Vancouver, but do you expect Dustin Byfuglien to be on the ice, or is he? What are you seeing into this situation?
Well, I think it's a day-to-day thing, for sure. It's lower body. So I would expect that if he's on the ice today, that we probably will see him tomorrow. If he's not on the ice today, then it's a bigger question mark as to whether we see him tomorrow. So you know, to speculate where he's at with his injury and recovery, I don't know. But the fact that he didn't skate in the practice and then the morning skate leading up to the game on consecutive days earlier this week against Edmonton, or, you know, pulling up toward the game in Edmonton, gave us an idea and an indication that he's kind of banged up. So I would say at this point it's probably day-to-day, and we'll have a better idea today of how he looks. If he takes to the ice, of course, all eyes will be on him, Jimmy, and we'll see certainly how he's propelling himself around the ice and if there's any sort of laboring going on. But we'll have to wait for 1:15 Pacific, which I guess is 3:15 back home, when they hit the ice today at UBC.
Paulie, I thought coming into the season that Paul Maurice being able to rely on the fourth line for upwards of 10 minutes a night, 5-on-5, would go a long way into helping strengthen the team up and down and allowing them to utilize special teams and keep the minutes in check for the upper echelon talent on the Jets. In this most recent game, I believe it was around 7 minutes of even strength time is what the fourth line got. Your thoughts on how important it is that Paul Maurice gets comfortable enough or feels confident enough in the fourth line to up that even strength ice time?
Well, I think that what it does is, and you're right, I think that he wants to get to the point where that fourth line is playing between 7 and 10 minutes, or maybe even to 11, and stretch it to around that that mark. But there's three things that really need to happen from a fourth line. You need to be able to kill penalties. You can't be getting scored on, and you can't be taking penalties. So if you do those three things and you do them well, you're going to command some more ice time. And certainly I thought the fourth line was able to do that and you know, especially not get scored on and especially not take a penalty, because generally speaking, your penalty killers are coming from your fourth line. Although if you watched the other day, Paul Maurice used some of his high-end players and Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler in certain situations on a penalty kill. But the fourth line, ideally, I think he would like to get to the point where he can use them and trust them a lot more and be able to shave some minutes off the top-end guys and use that energy line as an opportunity to go out when they get scored on or feel that they need to get a little bit momentum back in the game. And also, because of line matchups, especially on the road, be able to go out there, and sometimes if you don't get the matchup and you get caught with your fourth line out there, be able to go out there and hold water, hold serve for 30 or 40 seconds until you can get your line switched on the fly and get the players out there that you want. So, you know, there's a pretty big job required of the fourth line, but I think as this organization moves toward feeling deeper and getting better as a team, as a group, that you'll see those fourth line minutes go up. They have to, in order to make sure that your top end guys aren't burnt out by, you know, January because you've run them so hard. So Paul's talked about that even going back to last year, that if you can shave a few minutes here and there, not many minutes, but 2, 3, 4 minutes here and there on his top end guys, that it'll bode well for everybody throughout the lineup, especially as the team moves forward overall.
Only have about 30 seconds left, Paul, but are the players going to see a different Paul Maurice this year? Is the leash shorter than what was given last year in your mind?
Well, I think that he's already kind of showed us that, JT. I mean, he said you know, publicly that there's no room for waiting around here. And that's why he made a move with Joel Armia. He's made a move with Marco Dano already, and he's inserted Nick Petan. This is all within the first three games. You know, Dustin Byfuglien's been an injury. So contrary to the rumors that were going around, it wasn't that he was sat down. But having said that, I think Paul Maurice would be a little quicker to pull the trigger on some of personnel decisions and some line alterations, as we've seen with Nikolaj Ehlers, a lot quicker. There's no time to wait, I think was the quote that he said the other day after the first or second game. So I guess to a point, yes, he might be a little quicker in making those decisions and pulling the trigger. But I think it's because it's necessitated by the fact that the organization believes that this is a year that they can do some things and get back to the playoffs, and they don't want things to start slipping away, and all of a sudden you're into American Thanksgiving and you're looking way up in the standings going, wow, we still got a chance. No, I think it's important right now that you make those decisions so that you can kind of get on with what you need to do as quick as possible and try to alternate this thing so that you can get back to 2-2 like you have an opportunity to do tomorrow night.
Great stuff, Paul. We appreciate your time, and we'll look for those lineup updates and everything else throughout the day today here on TSN 1290. Thanks for doing this.
My pleasure, guys. We'll talk to you later. Have a great week.
Thanks, Paulie. Take care, man.
See you, Westy.
NHL news and notes are next on The Big Show and the Royal Sports Power Hour, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show and the Royal Sports Power Hour, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki. We're going to talk some Bombers with Darren Bombing at the top of the hour, and another chance for you to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas, courtesy of us here at TSN 1290. NHL news and notes time. Gentlemen, the Pittsburgh Penguins visited the White House yesterday. What did you think? And I'll just leave the room.
Well, I listened to it and saw it. I thought it was funny when Trump said, Sid is all shy. So I was like, Sid doesn't want to get wrapped up in anything to do. He'll go there and do the visit and get out of Dodge, right, without taking – doesn't want to make a – I think he didn't want any of his actions to be interpreted as anything like that. But it was just kind of goofy and weird and him looking for everyone. There was a funny thing on Jay and Dan this morning with Trump looking for everyone because he'd say some guy's name and spend 30 seconds looking for him, but whatevs.
Where is he? Where is he? Where's Sid? Where's none of these guys want to be politicians. No, they don't.
None of them wanted to be in the room, it looked like. Okay. Crosby's basically, you know, as the captain of the
hiding
team.
In the back.
Exactly, yeah. Right? Like, how yeah. far away could I get without making it look like I'm actually trying yeah. to get away from the person up here? So, yeah, I mean, at the very least, it wasn't a complete mockery of hockey and some of the players there, which, I guess that's the baseline now. With what's going on down south. At least it wasn't a total clown show.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it.
I thought Trump was going to politicize
yeah.
it, and he might still this morning, right? So let's hope that it's just that's it. And
yeah, you know what? I thought that too. I thought he was – I totally think that Crosby in the back was done on purpose. I totally think that he didn't, you know – politicize it and make this part of it. I mean, that was probably part of this, which for Trump is going a little further than I expected from him because he usually goes the other way. If somebody says, hey, can we just do this and make it not about
are you giving Trump credit for not politicizing it? Because I don't think that's certainly not what I'm implying.
I thought for sure he would. And I think that there's been discussions in the background that go, don't make this about politics. It is what it is. I thought he was. Did you not think he was going to do that yesterday?
I think he still might do it. Maybe he just didn't feel inspired to do it. He gave a couple of shots, but no one. There wasn't much reaction from the majority in the room when he said it. So I'm just not going to give him credit for being intelligent. It really is certainly, and you know.
Oh yeah, I don't give him credit. I give people who are trying to run this show credit. Anyways, they went, they appeared, they did their thing at the White House, the Pittsburgh Penguins, Stanley Cup champions. The St. Louis Blues are 4-0.
Yeah.
Carter Hutton gets a win yesterday.
They look pretty solid, huh? A lot of people thought they're done and dead, right? That they're going to have all kinds of struggle and all the rest of it. But early on here, they are pretty solid. And maybe not – I don't think defensively is what's surprising, but maybe their level of production from a goal standpoint is what is really surprising. I think everyone thought, for the most part, that they'd be okay defensively. But with some of the talent that they lost offensively, you'd expect maybe a little bit of a setback. But there they are again. And Mike Yeo getting the best out of the boys early on here.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I didn't think they would have this level of success early, but sometimes with injuries, the first part of the wave is the easiest, where you see guys step up right away and teams can kind of weather that storm. It's going to be maybe the next couple of weeks, you know, as this continues on, if they can keep that level of production up. But you got a guy like Tarasenko, who's good for, you know, an offensive explosion every time he takes to the ice. And Jake Allen he's second-half Jake Allen, not first-half Jake Allen. So that gives the Blues a chance.
Which, and as a goalie who's getting older and still kind of establishing himself, I know you've always been down on Allen. This doesn't surprise me. His level of play doesn't surprise me at all. Neither does it surprise me. And this is why I was so reluctant to push them out of the picture, and eventually I did to give the Jets a playoff spot over them. Which I'm still feeling uncomfortable about, but they're special teams, right? Last year, they're top eight in both power play and penalty kill, and so far this year, they're eighth on the power play and I believe 12th on the penalty kill. So still pretty solid special teams from the Blues, and maybe that's you just wonder if that ultimately will be another strength of the team here.
According to multiple reports on Monday, Golden Knights offseason signing Vadim Shipachev is growing tired of waiting for his promotion, and his agent is looking into the forward re-signing back in the KHL. Both Golden Knights general manager George McPhee and Shipachev's agent Peter Shaboda, the former NHLer, told TSN hockey insider Darren Drager they deny the reports. From McPhee, there's no truth to that. He's not allowed to go back. He's under contract with us.
Wow. I can't recall. Do the K and the NHL honor...
He can't go back.
No, he can't go back.
I guess that the only way would be if he retires, I guess, but that's we all know that would be a BS sort of move.
But in theory, he could.
That's I think from what I read, it sounded like there was almost a language barrier between the two sides that I guess they thought he was sent down for poor play, and McPhee had to explain to them it's kind of the whole contract situation. Either way, it's McPhee created this mess by himself.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, I don't think, even if there was communication, Shipachev doesn't care. I signed to play in the National Hockey League.
It's embarrassing. McPhee looks terrible on him that you have both he and Shea Theodore and even Alex Tuck in the AHL when they're better than what they have on the roster right now, and it's because he couldn't figure out how to trade or get rid of his glut of defensemen on the roster, when in reality, even when he does or if he does move any of them, he's not getting much value back for them. So it seems like he's holding out on this for very, very little assets.
We'll talk. Oh, go ahead.
3-0. That's what he's saying. Hey, 3-0.
We'll talk Bombers when we come back on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Not Auto Corp present the Blue Bus. Before every Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game this season, we're taking W fans to Investors Group Field in our Not Auto Corp VIP Blue Bus. We'll pick you up and drop you off at the Not Auto Corp VIP tent to tailgate before the game. Then after all the football action, take you back to wherever you started. Prize includes 6 tickets to an upcoming Blue Bombers home game and free transportation to and from. Enter to win now at TSN1290.ca. Jim Tolf, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you on The Big Show, TSN 1290. Your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas is coming up this hour, as well as Gus Katsaros from McKean's Hockey, and we'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line. An hour of your phone calls on the Boss Pizza fan line started at 9 o'clock. Right now, we welcome in Mr. Darren Bombing from TSN 1290's Manuk Dentcher Blue Bomber Game Day, our Blue Bomber reporter, and of course, CFL 60. Mr. Bombing, how are you?
Hey, I'm well, guys. What's going on today?
We're just wondering about Mr. Matt Nichols' hand.
Yes, everybody wondering. All eyes were firmly affixed on number 15's throwing hand, his right hand, after he got smacked a couple times in that loss to the Hamilton Tiger Cats. I'll be honest, guys, watching him yesterday at practice, you know, first saw him slide on that glove that had the middle index and thumb fingers of the glove removed. Saw him slide that on and go about his day looking seemingly normal. He looked completely his normal self. Made all the throws, delivered with velocity, no real wobblers. Everything looked relatively sharp. You know, I see quarterbacks you know, throw wobbler passes every single day at practice. I see quarterbacks miss throws every single day. Matt Nichols looked his complete normal self, participated in every offensive snap that he normally would. And, you know, that's really why when, you know, we got a chance to ask head coach Michael Shea about the injury and about, you know, his prognosis going into this game against the BC Lions on Saturday afternoon about pain management, whether that is going to be a factor or not in Matt Nichols. I wasn't asking about, you know, whether he'll need a pain-killing shot or anything like that. I was sincerely curious if pain in a game, when you're throwing the football 30, 35, or 40 times, if that in the third and fourth quarter is going to affect how he delivers the football. But based on just, you know, take-it-easy kind of practice reps yesterday, Matt Nichols looks fine. I expect him to play on Saturday, and so does Michael Shea.
DB, after the game, Andrew Harris sums it up that they get punched in the mouth, and really it was on the other side of the ball for the most part. Like the disappointing 3 hours out there for in watching that defense, man. What does the defense do here to sort of recover and reestablish itself?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned how Andrew Harris said they got punched in the mouth. Another player on the defense used the exact same phraseology, and that was Chris Randall. And we remember what happened to him on the third or fourth play of the game, and that was Brandon Banks, you know, turning number eight around and burning Chris Randall for a 60-yard touchdown. And really, Hamilton didn't look back from there. They scored on their first four possessions of the game, and it was pretty much over. They did smack him in the mouth, and it wasn't just on a physicality level. They just kept bringing it every single time they had an opportunity to make a play. Talking to some of those defensive leaders, I had a moment to speak with Chris Randall yesterday. They are not happy with the way they played. They had a really, really bad day at the office. I don't know how you fix it at this juncture. You know, we've talked about it for weeks and months now. This team gives up passing yards. This team gives up rushing yards. What the Hamilton Tiger Cats did so well in their 30-13 win was just control the tempo and control everything. They ran the ball when they wanted to run the ball. They needed a second down conversion. They did it, and they did it convincingly. I'm not sure if it comes down to scheme, execution on the field, or whether it's a perfect balance of it all. This Blue Bombers defense is just not very good. That is definitely their Achilles heel. And what we saw in that game against Hamilton was an offense that struggled to stay on the field because they were without their quarterback and this team's most outstanding player last year and most likely this year again. Hamilton just kept the ball in their control. They dominated time of possession. And really, once they got the lead, they cruised to victory because Winnipeg just wasn't able to counterpunch. If the BC Lions, who play the Winnipeg Blue Bombers twice over the next three games, if they get a lead and they hold on to it and are able to dictate the way Hamilton does, Winnipeg is going to be in real trouble. They sit at 10-4. Their destiny is in their own hands. They have an opportunity to win a couple games here in the final four games of the season and lock down a home playoff date. But really, you know, it could very easily and quickly slip between their fingers like sand, and we could suddenly be talking about Winnipeg playing on the road, whether it's in Saskatchewan or Edmonton, whoever decides to continue their pace there, and suddenly this West Division playoff picture, you know, in 2 weeks' time, we could be talking and singing a very different tune.
And given that scenario, obviously every healthy body is going to be playing and probably some banged-up ones this Saturday when the BC Lions are at IGF as well, Darren. But Michael Shea was asked about, you know, maybe week 17, week 18, if he would rest players, and that's just not what we can expect from him, I guess.
No, and I don't think they can afford to. You know, of course, it's going to matter how these games against BC go. They got Toronto, next Saturday after this Saturday against BC, so you know, it's obviously going to matter there. You know, we could see Saskatchewan lose a couple games. We could see Edmonton lose a couple games and Winnipeg win, and those things will be determined. But as far as the health of this team, throughout the season, they've been extremely fortunate. They're, Mo Leggett has missed a little bit of time. Weston Dressler has missed a little bit of time. Now we've seen, obviously, the loss of Jamal Westerman for the season. Ian Wild has missed 12 games. He's on his second stint on the six-game injured list after breaking his wrist. But they've been relatively fortunate up until this juncture of being a very healthy team and with their important players, their real game-breaker type players, being healthy. Now we're starting to see that slowly go away right when it matters most. Trent Kearney, Mike Miller, and maybe most importantly out of the group, Timothy Flanders. All did not practice yesterday. All are questionable to play on Saturday. Hopefully today at practice we'll get a better idea as far as those players. But in particular, Timothy Flanders, if he's unable to play, the dynamic, the entire dynamic and makeup and game plan for this Paul Appelbaum offense changes, because they have been using him and Andrew Harris in very unique ways. We talked about it before, as both running backs and receivers lining up in the slot. If you take that wrinkle away, this Blue Bombers offense is just one real phase and real dynamic to it that they'll no longer have if Flanders can't go.
I'm wondering if you, Ryan Langford, on that one play that it was a, led to the interception here from Matt Nichols, and just the lack of awareness or the sharpness that he had on the play that led to the interception, DB, has he talked about that play, or was he confronted about his lack of being tuned in?
Yeah, you know, I didn't get a chance to talk to Ryan Langford yesterday. It was an open locker room, and I was kind of going around talking to a bunch of other players. But I believe Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun spoke to him, or there was a report in the Winnipeg Sun. It might have been Paul Friesen, forgive me. But Ryan Langford did kind of put that on his own shoulders, admitted that, he made the wrong play there, and that interception, the first Matt Nichols has thrown since all the way back to that loss against the Calgary Stampeders on July 7th, that was on him. So, I'll hopefully get a chance to talk to Ryan Langford this week. He's obviously going to continue to be, a significant part of this offense, and obviously the return game. What I can tell you about Ryan Langford that I found really interesting, yesterday during field goal drills, where it's the entire team, 12 versus 12, working on field goals, Ryan Langford was out there with Justin Medlock watching on close by. And Ryan Langford kicked three or four field goals from ranges of 35 to 40 yards. He's got a big leg. We've seen him punt in games. We've seen him throw in games. We've obviously seen him run and receive. But now we're watching him kick field goals in practice. I think this is maybe sparked by what Winnipeg saw in their opponent last week, and that was Sergio Castillo going down to injury, and Felix Faubé-Lucier, the Canadian receiver for Hamilton, being forced into situations to place kick and punt with Sergio Castillo down. So, the Blue Bombers said, hey, maybe we should plan and have a contingency in case something does happen, because this is the time of year, Mike O'Shea says it, guys are playing with bumps, bruises, and through some, nicks and pain, playing with pain in game. So they're just making sure they got all their bases covered. And if, worst came to worst and something did happen to Justin Medlock, it looks like it's a very dynamic and talented athlete in Ryan Langford, who seems to kind of be a Swiss Army knife of different football abilities.
Darren Bomey joining us on the Big Show this morning, talking Blue Bombers and CFL, 15 minutes past the hour on TSN 1290. I think everybody had the Bombers winning that game against Hamilton. BC comes in with not a very good record as well. Clearly the Bombers won't take them lightly, but how do you see this matchup between the two teams, Darren?
Well, it's interesting. I got a chance to speak to Loa Ulrich at TSN 1040 in Vancouver on CFL 60 last night, and he talked about just kind of the inconsistencies and the struggles the BC Lions have had. They've lost six of their last seven games, and that one win came against the lowly Montreal Alouettes, and we all know from coast to coast how bad the Montreal Alouettes are. They've already been eliminated from playoff contention. It's interesting, when you look at the BC Lions and the type of team they are. They have talent really at every single position on the field. Their defensive backfield is extremely a talented group. But they've been, very susceptible to the pass and kind of very leaky, according to Lowell. So, we know what Solomon El-Mimian can do. They have, some decent players on the defensive line. But I kind of look towards this game of Andrew Harris being somebody who, if given the right opportunity, and often he has, he's coming off just nine touches last week, his lowest touch count of the season. If they get him involved, they're able to run the football consistently. I think the Winnipeg Blue Bombers are going to find success on offense. Again, it comes to that conversation of controlling the clock, controlling possession of the football game. And then you look at the BC Lions on offense, a very strong runner in Jeremiah Johnson. I think he's going to be, you know, despite maybe some lower numbers, he's always in the conversation come All-Star voting season. And then that receiving core that touts maybe the fastest player in the league in Chris Williams, a physical receiver in Manny Arsenault. They have a young player named Shaq Johnson who's really emerged alongside Brian Burnham and Jonathan Jennings, a young quarterback that has thrown for a lot of yards the last couple weeks, but generally speaking has been pretty inconsistent, especially you know, while he was fighting for that number one quarterback spot with Travis Lule. Of course, Lule shut down for the season with another shoulder injury. So it'll be interesting to see how BC comes into Winnipeg and plays these two games. Historically, these two teams, no love lost. They played a lot of very, you know, neck-and-neck battles with each other, including that West semifinal last year and also including that Winnipeg Blue Bombers loss in BC in late July, 45-42. And we remember some of the trick plays that each team implemented in that game. BC's 6-8. They have a chance to get back into the playoff picture in the West. They're going to be very hungry, and I expect a really hard-fought battle, not just on Saturday afternoon in Winnipeg, but in two Saturdays from now when BC comes back here.
Darren, great stuff. We'll look for more of your coverage throughout the week. And, of course, Manuk Dencher Blue Bomber Game Day Saturday at 1 o'clock right here on TSN 1290. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. Take care. Have a good day.
Thanks, Davey. Take care, buddy.
Your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas is next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Twelfth caller through at 780-1290 will be our next qualifier as TSN 1290 and RedTag.ca present Hockey Nights in Vegas, sending five lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November, less than a month away now, where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Las Vegas Golden Knights Friday, November 10th at the T-Mobile Arena. Prize includes return airfare to and from Sin City, free parking at Winnipeg Richardson International Airport, courtesy of Park and Fly. Two hockey tickets, Jets versus Golden Knights, November 10th at T-Mobile Arena. Four nights accommodations on the Strip and $1,290 in cash to help cover a few extras during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays at 7:15 a.m. and 8:15 a.m. right here on The Big Show. 12:15 p.m. with Kevin Hrushevsky on the Don Vito Roundtable and 5:15 p.m. with Hustler and Rick Ralph on the Afternoon Ride. Or watch for bonus chances to qualify online. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show. Next grand prize announcements coming up October 23rd and November the 6th. For more information, check out tsn1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas, presented by redtag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals. And us here at TSN 1290.
And remember, if you win this sucker, that Shane Knighty, we were told, will come by and visit you during the game.
Really?
And anyone that saw him yesterday, man, he might be wearing those gold speckled shoes and that gold speckled belt the way it was last night.
The sheriff will tap you on the shoulder and the sparkle will be off
what
his shoes
that?
And it'll be like, how's she going?
Looked like he was about ready to perform with Wayne Newton after the game.
Vegas Strong was the t-shirt he had, and of course the gold, was it gold shoes?
Oh yeah, it was like gold sparkly shoes and gold sparkly belt. He wasn't messing around, man.
It's what the millennials call swag, Troy.
Woo.
Swag.
I never really put Mr. Knighty in that over there, in that fashion sort of way, you know?
He always had. He was with F Apparel, and he had the big suits or the nice. Shouldn't say big.
Didn't see him going glittery. He went glittery.
Yeah, that's true. He has a white suit.
He's taking it to glitter.
He had a white suit. He had an all-black suit. He had a white tie and white shoes, and he's got it all.
They call that the Colonel.
I wonder where that glitter stops.
In a lot of ways, I feel like he's been training for Vegas his whole life. Who's our latest qualifier? As TSN 1290 and RedTag.ca present Hockey Nights in Vegas.
Yeah, Derek got out after that conversation, but it's Derek Johnson.
Big D.
Derek.
Big Johnson.
Johnson.
Oh. Yeah.
Say what? Do you know him? Derek Johnson's our latest qualifier. Hockey Nights in Vegas. Derek, just for doing so, you get a Jets gear gift card. And for those of you listening, our next two grand prize draws, still plenty of time to get in, October 23rd and November 6th. Your next chance to qualify is with Kevin Hrushevsky and the Don Vino Roundtable at 12:15 today, and then 5:15 p.m. on the afternoon ride with Huss and Rick. And, of course, we'll do some more online qualifying as well. Visit our TSN 1290 Facebook page. What's your guys' early thoughts on this Vancouver Canucks team? They beat they lost to the Ottawa Senators in a shootout last night. Winnipeg's Mark Stone with the shootout winner for the Ottawa Senators. What are your thoughts on this Vancouver team now 1-0-1 on the season, just two games played so far?
Well, I'm just looking at a chart right now from Sean Tierney of Charting Hockey, and they are alone by themselves in the portions in the two segments of the chart towards dull and bad, right? Like Buffalo's there with them, and then there's a couple other teams, but so they're not generating a whole lot and keeping things pretty low key for the most part. So this is a situation I know that you got a team here that just took down Edmonton in the Vancouver Canucks. But fair to say, boys, we've been talking. If the Jets consider themselves a playoff team, there's going to be certain situations and games you stroll into that you have to take advantage of. And it's not late. It's not sometime in March that those games count, right? It's now. So this is a situation here where you go into Vancouver and you got to come out of these situations with 2 points if you're going to finish or have an opportunity to finish above the line.
And a 2-2 start is that's not a bad spot to be in with their first four game, because I think looking at the first four, we would have said Vancouver, you got to get a win there, and then Toronto, Edmonton, Calgary. That 2-2 is all right, and then you go into at home against Carolina, a good Carolina team as well. Troy's right. It's not like Vancouver is a horrible team, like a Colorado last year,
but they're a notch below
the also rans and some of those teams all in the mix in the middle, which the Jets are a part of. So a loss tomorrow night would just be catastrophic.
I had them at 2-2 after the first four games. I just didn't have them in this 2-2, but fair enough. We'll see what they can get done. And I keep it locked here on TSN 1290. We'll have the latest on the lineup, who's taking part in practice and who's not. Right before we go, I got a buddy out west who just left me a note that Tony Nochita's FC Lions from here in Winnipeg were at the National Men's Senior Soccer Championships in Surrey. They lost in the final to a club from Halifax 1-0, but senior men's soccer making it to the final of the national championships. Congratulations to them and former national team member Tony Nochita, who's running that program here from the city. We'll take a break when we come back. Some hockey talk with Gus Katsaros on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca, and want to remind you, you can stream us on the iHeartRadio app and all your favorite devices, or get a customized playlist to suit your mood or activity, your music, your stations. Always free. Download the iHeartRadio app today and stream on. As Brandon Rewicki just told you in SportsCenter, Boston Red Sox have fired manager John Farrell. He had three divisional titles and a World Series championship in 5 years.
That's crazy, huh?
A World Series title and three divisional titles in 5 years.
They're going to be pushing Gibby out the door here in a couple days?
I don't know. So he's gone. I was watching the Astros-Red Sox series, obviously, and throughout the broadcast in the States, they were saying that his job could be and is basically on the line with this series. There's been a lot of discussion in Boston about his leaving pitchers out there too long, being a former... Some of his decisions have cost them wins, apparently. However, they didn't cost him enough wins to not make the playoffs and to not win a title in five years. So You know, one thing we never talked about during the playoffs was David Price being a relief pitcher once again for the Red Sox. Like, at that money, and when they couldn't keep him, and basically his playoff career has come down to just being a relief pitcher.
How many years does – how big of a contract does he have?
I think he has 34 more years.
And I think it's at $78.2 billion. So, John Farrell out as Boston Red Sox manager. That's just breaking 3 divisional titles and a World Series championship in 5 years there. Going to talk some hockey now. I'm going to do it with Gus Katsaros from McKean's Hockey. Gus, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being with us again. One of our favorite guests from listeners. We always get tweets about your knowledge. And I'll start with bestowing on our listeners that game that Austin Matthews had statistically versus the Chicago Blackhawks.
Oh, it's one of those things where you just... So I didn't actually watch it live. I had to do it in intervals. So it was interesting to see how the Leafs were performing in the first two periods versus what Matthews did to essentially bring them back out of a loss and into the win column. We could probably replay his snipe in overtime to win it on replay and just be amazed at all the little intricate details as to what happened. But the reality is he's taken this team and it's now becoming the Austin Matthews Toronto Maple Leafs. It's one thing to just provide leadership and scoring ability. It's the other thing to take the team, embrace it, be the leader at such a young age without a C on his chest. It's just an exceptional way to start this season.
Now, some people are just, you say Leafs and hackles go up and hatred and all the rest of it. But I know it's early, Gus.
But these dramatic pauses.
But when you're seeing what these guys, where they're at right now, and like, are they exceeding, although it's early, are they exceeding your expectations for what they're bringing to the table at this point?
Not really. I mean, I was pretty adamant that they really didn't need any really big defensive help or needed to make any big moves on the blue line. They could just tweak their defensive, the way that they approach defense, especially through the use of their forwards. But, I mean, I really don't care if they win 5-4 or 6-5 or 9-8 or 10-9. It doesn't matter. A win is a win. I know that it might be a bit dramatic and coaches probably hate it, but as a fan, I couldn't care less. If it came down to the fact that they needed to be better defensively in order to be a little more successful in the playoffs, I think that might be a concern. But at this point, this team can score at will. So if they're down a couple of goals, it's easy to see them coming back. If they're playing bad defensively, I mean, we look at the New York Rangers game, and I turned it off at 5-1, and I went to dinner, and then I came back, and it's 5-5, and you're, okay, well, this is typical Toronto hockey, but in the end, they still scored enough goals to be able to preserve the win, and that's essentially what you're looking for.
Do you see them getting better defensively, having said that, and the amount of goals they are giving up?
You know, I think I see a little bit in terms of tweaks of how they're performing, but I don't really think that they can make a dramatic wholesale change defensively. Personally, I think you go with the style that is going to bring you immediate success. In this case, it's an up-tempo, really high-energy, focused on offense, scoring goals kind of game. As long as you can make sure that you're not putting your team into jeopardy by really being reckless and allowing other odd man situations the other way and abandoning all essence of defense, I really don't mind that all-out offensive mentality that they're pursuing right now.
Are you surprised by the lack of offense holding Carolina back right now?
Oh, it's really frustrating to watch. And last night's game was just one of those things. If you're a fan, you wanted to throw something at the wall. They were buzzing. They had a lot of outside movement. There's a lot of maybe a little bit of intricacy that hasn't been fully integrated into their lineup as of yet. And again, it's really early in the season. At the same time, you know, they're much better in net. They're pretty solid on the blue line. I think that the goals will come. We look at goals being kind of random events. They don't happen as often as shots and shot attempts. And then what I think will eventually happen is we'll see the floodgates open. They'll start scoring. They're still going to be doing the same things that they're doing now in order to generate scoring chances. But once they do start going in, I think that you'll find that a lot of those sticks will become less heavy, a lot more players will be more intricately involved in generating even more scoring without abandoning a pretty decent defensive game. There could be some tweaks regarding that. But overall, I think it's just a matter of when Carolina will start breaking out rather than why aren't they doing that now.
Gus Katsaros from McKean's Hockey joining us on the Big Show this morning. 39 minutes past the hour, TSN 1290. Follow him on Twitter, at Cats Hockey, Cats with a K. The Las Vegas Knights are 3-0, and their owner, Bill Foley, has said this week as they kicked off their home opener last night that he expects them to be either winning the Stanley Cup or in the Stanley Cup Finals within 6 years. With this roster and where they sit, is that realistic in your mind?
Well, I mean, as an expansion team, I wouldn't expect that. But now, at the same time, this is probably an owner that sat down with his management group and said, look, this is where we want to plan. This is what we want. So that six-year figure is either something that they came up with in a boardroom saying that, you know, we can do X, Y, and Z in order to achieve this goal, or they're pulling out a number in order to show some optimism. The reality here is we expected the Leafs to be 8-10 years, whatever it was from the beginning of a rebuild, to be competitive, but here they are. If Vegas has that same kind of fortune to be able to find some type of a generational player, and then enhance that lineup, that roster is just simply not good enough to make the playoffs, regardless of the nice, hot 3-0 start and you know, the real good story about the home opener last night and the way that they approached the pregame ceremonies and all of that. Those are fantastic stories. And the hype is fantastic, too. But in the end, they are still an expansion team, and they're going to struggle to make the playoffs this year. And unless they do something to be able to enhance that lineup very, very quickly, I don't know whether or not that six-year time frame to be in the Stanley Cup Finals, let alone win a cup, is really viable.
Wondering from a defensive standpoint, the Jets here have really struggled quite a bit, at least in games one and two, and are starting to batten down the hatches a little bit. Have you had an opportunity to see what the Jets are doing defensively and maybe even overall, just the early out-of-the-gate offensive push that you're seeing here in the NHL?
Yeah, I haven't focused too much with Winnipeg outside of the first game against Toronto, but, I mean, they looked really... I'll use the word discombobulated in that first game. They just seemed like they were in position and pucks weren't working. And then Steve Mason didn't necessarily help that that final outcome. I'm not sure if the Jets have done any real big wholesale changes. I don't think anything sweeping is any different from last year. I recognize that they might be a little bit more aggressive down below the goal line, but I don't think that that's really enough of a change to say that these are the tweaks that coaching staff have implemented in order for the Jets to be better defensively. Bottom line here is, as long as they can kind of retrieve the puck, get it back, get it off their opposing forwards and start limiting shots, that's going to be their mantra. They have to do a better job at retrieving pucks and getting it back, and then moving up the other way. Their strength really is on the offense, and they have lots of firepower up there. It's a matter of getting pucks to that high-powered offense to help them diffuse a little bit of the defensive issues that they might currently show.
Gus, maybe not from the fan perspective inside you, but from a statistical number inside you, what's your favorite player to watch right now?
Ooh. There's probably lots. I mean, Johnny Gaudreau, I think, is one of my favorites simply because of his skills. From a statistics perspective, it's nice to see the performance coming out of players, but I'm watching them more for their elevated elements of skill. Ricard Raquel pulled off a move a couple nights ago in Anaheim that's just incredible in its subtlety and yet how easily it worked. So for me, players like Ricard Raquel, very skilled, underrated, coming into their own. Johnny Gaudreau is already a star, and he can really carry that team. Other like lesser names like Sven Barchi in Vancouver is one of my favorites. Riley Smith in Vegas is another of my favorites. Guys in New York like Anders Lee, great little player. Mika Zibanejad, I expected a breakout, and this is what's happening so far early on. You could go around the league and start naming a whole bunch of individual players. I'll even give Montreal a little bit of thing. I mean, I think that Jonathan Drouin is a fantastic hockey player. I'm not sure whether or not he's fit to be a center, but, I mean, from a skills perspective, it's when these players have that puck on their blade and the way that they perform and fake out and deke and find seams, that's what really excites me about watching any particular player.
I like what you brought up there, and the no real apparent tweaks here to the Jets. And looking, I'm just looking now at the shots against allowed, and I know it's early, but still, this is what we reference here right now. And the Jets 29th in allowing 38.3 shots per game. That's of concern. And then you wonder, you just reference some other teams here, and you look for, okay, well, what's maybe the impact been down in Dallas upon the arrival of Ken Hitchcock, although they're 1-2 right now. But you're looking, they're down at best in the league at allowing only 25.3. I know it's real early here, Gus, but seeing this is when the trends start, right? And you start to gather more and more information as you continue down this road here.
And this is also where those habits form, too. If you're not hitting those habits and creating or at least executing the game plan the way that coaching staff is expecting, this is where your season can start to falter. If Dallas is firing on all cylinders and they're performing well enough, and that's because the team has bought into the concept, that's a great positive. If it just happens to be because of the opposition they faced or the circumstances that they faced, then that's the problem about dealing with small sample sizes. You just don't really know what the actual effect is. You only see a result, and that result may not necessarily be indicative of the play. So with Winnipeg, I a shot on goal is not necessarily a bad thing if it's coming from a low percentage area. It's those high percentage areas that Winnipeg has to be worried about. And as long as they're able to at least minimize the impact of those shooting areas, I think that they'll eventually get those shots down, but they'll also have less goals scored on them. And the reality here is you do want to keep your shots down. You do want to try to get the puck back as much as possible, and you do want to limit a lot of high-percentage shooting areas. And if the Jets are able to somehow implement something that is able to envelop that idea, I think that they'll be okay over the course of the season.
Great stuff as always, Gus. We appreciate it. Thanks for doing it, and have a great day.
Pleasure's mine. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks so much, Gus.
We'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line on the Big Show next, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
You wanted it back, we caved. TSN 1290 wants to better your basement with a host of cool add-ons. This time there are two caves to choose from, the Man Cave or the Mam Cave. Each one comes with a $500 men's or women's Burton Gear shopping spree from Alter Ego Sports. Pizza night for 10, courtesy of Boston Pizza. Two tickets to either the upcoming UFC Fight Night, December 16th at Bell MTS Place, or two tickets to Shania Twain's Now Tour, May 13th at Bell MTS Place, at Winnipeg Jets Guys or Girls Night Out, including two tickets to an upcoming 2017-18 home game at the Bell MTS Place, and, of course, a customized Winnipeg Jets hockey jersey, puck party, and each cave comes with a rink water, nice rink, rink in a box, the industry standard for outdoor rink starter kits. Select your cave of choice online at tsn1290.ca. We'll randomly draw a winner of each prize package on Monday, October the 30th. Couple more weeks to get your name in for that. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you on the Big Show. The Boss Pizza fan line wide open, 780-1290 in 7 minutes' time at 9 o'clock. You can also text your thoughts on the conversations to 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. And we'll start with the Vegas Golden Knights home opener last night, doing a great job, in my opinion, of balancing honoring the victims and the tragedy that took place 9 days ago from yesterday, 10 days ago today, in last night's ceremony, and also kicking off hockey in Las Vegas. Your thoughts on the opening ceremonies and the game itself? They're now 3-0.
Yeah, just the storyline of them being 3-0 is really cool for sure, and just sort of rolling along here. And the fans, it was real neat after that first goal was scored, just the level of excitement. And I agree with you, they did a good job in being delicate and yet, you know, that whole balancing act, right, of paying respect to the names on the ice was really cool and all the rest of it. And unfortunately, too many sports organizations and others are just, this is such a common occurrence right now, especially in America, that unfortunately, you know, people are getting used to having to deal with this or do it. and all the rest of it. But great job there by the Golden Knights, and they are emerging here early on. They were going to be a story no matter what. But at 3-0 right now, they are starting to sort of flex their way into being a real interesting storyline.
Yeah, 3-0 with their number one center, number one defenseman, still waiting to get into game action for the first time. It's really wild, and I was impressed by the fans. It was kind of cool because you really wonder how many of them have ever seen a hockey game before, mm-hmm. honestly.
Yeah.
Like, you just kind of wonder how that whole sort of thing played out, and you could hear the announcers sometimes kind of, I guess, goading the fans into cheering or making them aware of how certain things worked in the game, but it was cool. They were pretty legit. They might not know a whole lot about the sport yet, but they were loud and they were invested, and it was cool. And it'll just be interesting to see if every now and then we get kind of a fairy tale story, a team that comes completely out of nowhere and surprises everyone. And you just wonder how long this quick start can go on for.
Oh, brother, it's going to last as long as Marc-Andre Fleury keeps that .963 save percentage going.
Best start for an expansion team ever in the history of the National Hockey League. And I just saw a stat where of the expansion teams like the Anaheims and the Floridas and the Nashville Predators, the only other team close to getting their first three wins this early was nine games. It took nine games and usually double-digit games for an expansion team to get three wins on the season. What are your thoughts on the Knights? And Bill Foley, the owner, saying he expects the team to be in the Stanley Cup Finals or winning the Stanley Cup within 6 years.
Well, lofty goal, but I mean, he can't come out and, you know, say put too long of a timeline to it. And I think it's a reasonable statement, but a lofty goal, if I may say that. Certainly, you can be playoff, you know, cross the playoff line and be a contending team in 6 years. But, you know, 6 years for the Cup is a lofty goal, but of course you're going to make such a statement.
Yeah, playoff team in 6 years, I'm fine with that statement, but I think the Cup is a little bit outlandish, but it's Vegas, so whatever.
Jets return to practice today in Vancouver. We heard from Paul Edmonds. We'll have the updates on the lineups and who's on the ice and who's not. But Dustin Byfuglien, lower body injury, whether he'll be back on the ice or not. We sort of had that discussion that if he's healthy, do you put him back in or do you go with basically, you know, as some coaches like to do? And I think this excludes Byfuglien. I think he goes back in personally. But when you win, do you keep things the way they are?
Well, hey, man, if he's healthy, you wouldn't suspect that this – first of all, so if he's injured, who knows? There are pictures of him fishing and catching a 12-foot sturgeon yesterday. So I would assume that if he was injured, if you're standing in a river with potentially slippery, all that stuff, whatever the lower body thing is, I'm assuming that he's healthy now and would expect him to start if it was an injury. If it was a healthy sit, you know, that's not going to last very long because that would be a big-time thing for him to deal with and come back and play. So either way, if it was injury-related, he's fishing in a river yesterday, I expect him to be back tonight. If it was a healthy thing and they just presented it as an injury thing, I think one game sitting out would all that he'd be due. So either way, to me, it all adds up to him playing tonight. And let's hope that he goes out there with a different mindset and similar to the one that we saw with the leaning towards maintaining strong structure in the D-zone tonight.
Yeah, he goes back in, and there's no real question about it. And then you make any kind of decision about that after the game or after the next couple of games because this team, it wasn't a perfect defensive outing by any means, but they had the blueprint put in place of how to be at least competent defensively and to kind of give your team and give your goalies a chance at success. And if he or if any other player, for that matter, is incapable of doing that for multiple games, then, yeah, you're going to have to look at a change, whether that be benching or trading or anything like that. But there's no doubt Buff deserves another chance to get back in, assuming he's fully healthy.
Taking your calls next on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. The U.S. has failed to qualify for the World Cup as well. We talked about that. Major League Baseball playoffs. And Matt Nichols back at practice. Had a special glove on, but looks like he will go Saturday. 780-1290. Your calls next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon with you, and your thoughts and your calls. You can text 1290-90 with standard message rates applying, or the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Ryan wants us to discuss the Nashville-Philadelphia ending last night. It was ridiculous. Facepalm. Brandon doesn't want to talk about it, Ryan. Nashville, with two goals in the last 2 minutes.
And yeah, and I don't know if you guys saw what actually happened, but Philly takes two penalties on the same play to give Nashville a 5-on-3 with about 2 minutes left. They score to make it, or they score to tie it rather, 5-5. And then for some unknown reason, Dave Haxtell decides to challenge an offside on the play. And the review, it's not even close either, which is kind of the aside from it being dumb to begin with, it's not even a close offside challenge anyways. And, of course, the Flyers have to kill off a 5-on-3 again for the second time in 2 minutes because they still have the 5-on-4. And Philip Forsberg scores the game winner with 30 seconds left.
That was, from a game management standpoint, that was a real dumbass challenge.
Imagine if that happened in this city. What would happen the next day?
Yeah.
It was like, ugh. Yeah, that was a college move.
Yeah,
that wasn't the Ralph Engelstad Arena last night, Haxtell. It's the big leagues. I'm gonna swear if I keep talking.
He's sweating. Sweat's dripping down. His
Ryan
head.
DeLong, there you go. Ask and you shall receive. It has been discussed on the Big Show. 780-1290 in the Boss Pizza fan line. Kyle, you're kicking us off today on the Big Show. Go ahead, sir.
Hey guys. Good morning.
Good morning.
I've got a little bit of a history question for Troy, and the good thing is there's no wrong answers. I was watching the Bomber game with my dad when that Hamilton kicker went down and the receiver had to do the kicking duties. And I was wondering, I asked my dad this, and he said he couldn't ever remember if this had happened. When you and the legend himself, Bob Cameron, were playing, did you ever go down with an injury and Bob had to place kick and kick the field goal?
No, sir. Bobby and I were number one and two. Bobby leads it with Iron Man, my friend. So we never, I don't think, playing together. Like, Bobby got hurt a little bit, his back, after a bus ride to Regina where he put an end to his Iron Man streak, if I remember correctly. But no, that never happened, no. The last time I remember that happening was Trevor Kennard getting hurt and Joe Poplawski stepping in for him and kicking field goals for a few games and like hitting 80% of them or something like that.
Joe, so, really?
Yeah.
Would Bob have been able to kick the field goals, or would somebody else have done it? Or would it have been like, we'll worry about it if it happens sort of thing?
I'm not sure that anyone on the team would have been athletic enough to step up to hit field goals, but maybe, probably, Bob. Yeah, probably, man. Unless there was some receiver like similar to Langford that played a bunch of soccer and could sidewind it, but it would probably be Bobby, yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks for the answer.
Cool, man. Take care.
You too.
Athletic enough on a professional football team.
Hey, man.
To kick field goals.
Different skill set.
It is.
Like one of the old linemen back in the 50s just come and do the old toe punch. Right?
Totally.
And was it Langford yesterday he was doing it, just
yeah,
in case?
Yeah, hitting them pretty good.
Yeah.
So he said in high school he used to kick them, and his dad would kind of joke with him because he'd go get the touchdown kick, the extra point kick, the kickoff, come sit down on the bench.
Ocho Cinco actually handled a couple of field goals and kickoffs. Yeah. I think it might have been for the Pats. Yeah.
I think he also tried out.
He tried out for KC.
Soccer team, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And remember when Ndamukong Suh attempted, like, he was the guy Detroit had to use one game.
Really?
After their kicker. He had a PAT. He used to play, he used to apparently be a crazy good soccer player.
Huh.
But obviously a bit too large for the game. But he gave it a good kick. He missed, he shanked it, but went farther than I thought it would.
It's, I tell you what, when that happened, I thought, boy, does that ever open the door here for the Bombers, right? You lose your punter and your place kicker. That's a pretty critical piece there, and the Bombers couldn't take advantage of it.
Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Thanks for the call. Kyle, you can also text your thoughts to 1290-90 with standard message rates applying here on The Big Show. Back to the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Andy, you're on the program. Go ahead, Andy. Hi, Andy. Andrew? Unde? All right, we'll move on to Jeff. Jeff, you're on The Big Show. Go ahead, Jeff.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
Was Bufflin really fishing yesterday on his day off?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I get it's a day off, but if he's injured, I would hope that as a professional, he'd be spending some time with the medical staff.
I would presume he did.
I'm right there with you. You shouldn't be doing that.
If he wasn't injured, if it was actually a benching by the coach, he just flipped the big bird to the coach. Instead of spending some time studying some film, I'm going fishing.
Either way, it's a PR nightmare, yeah.
Yeah, I phoned in a couple of years ago when they were trying to sign him. And I said, just trade him.
I will say this about the fish. I will say this. When you have a day off with the NHL and the NHLPA, it literally is a day off. Even if you want to go into the rink, unless you're injured, you cannot. You are not allowed to. It's the same as bombers in practice, and you're only allowed to be on the field for so long. And even if you want to stay and do stuff, you're not allowed to under their agreements. If you're injured, and let's just give him the benefit of the doubt, I would presume he went in and did what he was supposed to do in the injury and then apparently went fishing. But I will say that when you have a day off by the PA, you are literally mandated to not be in the rink.
Yeah, but then if he wants to set a tone for the season with the young guys, and if they're serious about making the playoffs this year, Bufflin's got to show more leadership. The first two games, he was skating around like it was pond hockey, and I said 2 years ago, 3 years ago, before you signed that contract, that they should trade him, and Leibel called animal, but that's my thought. They should start working the phones.
Leibel called you an animal.
He did. Well, yeah.
Yeah, Leibel and I would argue with that too, man. So I'm right there with you. And you know what? I'm with you 100%. Regardless of, whatever the situation was, there's no way in the world that you should be, if you're out on that river fishing, you sure as hell shouldn't allow a picture to be taken of it and allow it's this sort of a PR mess for your organization.
And, yeah, I think we're all in agreement concerning your thoughts on his first two games. That I think we all discussed that at length, that he needs to be better than what we've seen from him as a couple of the other players on the team.
I'm really surprised that it hasn't blown up to be about 100 times bigger than it is at this point.
Anything else, Jeff? Okay, we'll go to our next caller on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Steve, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Did Brandon say John Farrell was fired?
Yes, John Farrell from the Boston Red Sox will not return as a statement from the
Red Sox.
Didn't
he make the playoffs almost every year? He was there.
He won. Not only did he make the playoffs, he won three division titles and a World Series in the 5 years he was the manager.
So that's got to be a personality conflict then. He's certainly got the ability.
Well, I don't watch a lot of Red Sox games, but the ones I do, and I obviously as an Astros fan, I was watching that series, and the broadcasters throughout every game said that this series really banks on John Farrell's continuing as manager just for some of his decisions and his management. And I mean, there's a lot of Jays fans that don't like John Farrell, and I understand because he bolted. But, I mean, if you put yourself, take baseball out of it, if that's your dream job, that's your dream job. And he went and won a World Series there, so I can understand some bitterness towards it. But, the things I have issues with John Farrell is he leaves his starting pitchers in way too long, and getting tossed in that game four, like in the second inning, and I understand the strike zone was not legit for both teams, but when you're in a do-or-die game and you get tossed, I think, in the second or third inning, to me, that's bad management.
Three division titles and one World Series in 5 years.
What have you done for me lately?
Are you kidding me?
Okay, I have a cold, but I sound sexier, right, with the cold?
You sound quite sexy, yeah.
I wouldn't say it's exactly Demi Moore, but it's all right,
maybe
I guess.
More Merle Haggard than Demi Moore.
I have her belly in that famous picture. Oh, never mind. my buddies and I were talking on the weekend. I'm just going to say it. We said this. So two things. First scenario, and I hope I explained this right. You own a team for 1 year only. So your job is to get as many wins just this 1 year. Who's the first player you pick? And it was between McDavid and Crosby. We both said Crosby by a hair, maybe halfway through the season, but close, right? And the second one was, you're an owner of a team for 10 to 15 years, and your job is to build a winner and look at the long term. Who's the first player you pick? Not McDavid, Matthews. That's what we thought. I'd be interested in your thoughts.
Thanks for the call, Steve.
I think no doubt first one is Crosby. And, hey, McDavid might have an upper hand offensively, but Crosby still dwarfs McDavid defensively.
Well, and he just knows those intricacies of the game by now, that those little extra battles along the boards and stuff, little tricks that McDavid will learn.
Even in the Jets game, there's twice where he put himself in bad position that helped to lead to two Jets goals. McDavid did, and Crosby's just way too sound defensively. Mm. But the whole Matthews-McDavid thing is real interesting.
You want to kind of scoff at it right away when you hear it, but I just Austin Matthews is a lot better than people envisioned a year ago.
Yeah.
Like, you have to recalibrate your expectations of what that kid's going to do. I would still take McDavid, and I wouldn't really think twice about it, but he's number two. And even if you're talking about this year alone, like, where do you put Austin Matthews? If it was just, like Steve said, just a one-year sort of thing. Like, you have Crosby, McDavid, 1-2 in terms of centerman, but then after that, how long do you go until you take Austin Matthews?
You know what I've noticed from
both
of them?
Might be the end of this year.
Is there, they're given, they have to be these leaders now at such a young age. And McDavid, when he scored that second goal against Calgary in the opener, you know, wants to go crazy and does for a split second and then collects himself right away. Austin Matthews gets that overtime one, goes down to one knee, but then the post game just total all business. Like,
all players are like that, though, not just them, right?
I enjoy, like, young players going a little crazy when they score big goals and stuff, and I just noticed that because they're the future leaders and McDavid is the captain now, that it's sort of reined in just a bit.
Dude, that is NHL-wide. When do you see Yakupov goes wild after sending a game into overtime? Is that what he did on the knees down and pumping? And he gets like lambasted, right? Those celebrations, that's what all NHL players do. Yeah.
Thanks for the call, Steve. We'll take one more before we have to break. Kevin, you're on the big show, TSN 1290. Go ahead, Kevin. Hi, Kevin. All right, try again, Kevin. We'll take a break here and take more of your calls on the Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Tim Hebert, the NHL content manager for RosterResource.com, tweeting out 5 minutes ago that Jets defenseman Mark Stewart has found a job in Germany with Adler Mannheim, the club. He'll be teammates with Marcel Gotch, former NHLer, and former Jet and NHLer Devin Setoguchi. Mark Stewart's going to Germany to continue his hockey career.
That's cool, man. If the fire still burns inside you to play, why not go and have some fun and play?
780-1290 on the Boss Pizza Fan Line here on the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and who's next?
Mike.
Mike, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Gentlemen, thanks for taking my call. Guys, I feel the year is going to be a referendum on the coach. And I think there's two decisions that we're going to get insight into in the upcoming game, namely what he does with Bufflin and what he does in the pipes, that will go a long ways towards defining whether it's a successful year for Paul Maurice. And I feel you've got to hold out Bufflin. You have to send the message that defensive structure is critical. And I think you need to put Hellebuck in. I think Mason did not earn another game. Hellebuck clearly did. And again, I think you need to say to the players, I'm going to reward performance. And I haven't seen enough of that from Maurice in the years. And the year they made the playoffs, Bufflin missed significant time with injury, and I felt that the team had to play a structured game simply because they didn't have the horses to do otherwise, and that was a key to success. And I think perhaps the coach has to create a little bit of that artificially by holding out what is one of your top offensive defensemen to send a message and to create some structure? Because I see nothing that suggests that Bufflin is going to be any different. Absolutely nothing.
I agree with you that it's going to be a different year for Maurice in the leash. I think we've seen a little bit of that already. I agree with you lower body injury or not, that there's no bigger message to send than, like, moving Joel Armia down, taking Dano out, putting Dano in, taking Armia out. That's a message, but there's no bigger message than to say that with Dustin Byfuglien. As for Steve Mason, I think Connor Hellebuyck played really, really good, and I think he deserves another start. But I don't think Steve Mason played poor enough to not earn another start, and I think the team left him hung out to dry. I saw him make some big saves, like some really good saves that I think were lost in the games because of the amount of goals they gave up.
I'm not hearing anything that says take Hellebuyck out. I'm not hearing anything that says take Hellebuyck out. I think he's earned it. And
Wait a minute. He's earned it on one game. We all agree that he didn't earn it at the end of the year, and we all agree that we're pretty happy Steve Mason's here. But now he plays one game, and you think he's earned to be the starting goaltender?
I agree with the guy. I agree completely with Mike.
You do?
Yeah. Well, because I don't think unless the organization has anointed him the starter.
Well, they did.
I don't know. Did they? Like, to me, and you're not. We're not asking what the organization. We think the organization's going to do. I think what Mike's saying and what I agree with him is, and I thought Steve Mason's playing really good. Well, like I can think of one goal that got through him that he should have stopped there. But for me, I'm much more open minded to let these guys battle back and forth. And when you go play at the level that you saw from Connor Hellebuyck, whether it's unfair to Steve Mason or not, he stays in there until he struggles.
One game, guys. We're talking about one game for Hellebuyck. I'm not giving him the mantle of starter. And by the way, I'm not necessarily a fan of the idea that someone has anointed the starter in the pipes. Again, I go back to Jim answering your question by saying, what has Mason earned in Winnipeg? What did Mason's performance last year in Philadelphia earn him other than the door?
Well, so, I'm going by the understanding that from the day he was signed and everybody we've had on, from Paul Edmonds to hearing Darren Drigger and everybody else, he was given $4 million a year to come in and be the starting goaltender and to help Connor Hellebuyck. We questioned, like, who would start it if Hellebuyck had a good camp. And all summer and all training camp, everybody we said who we had on, Edmonds, Bayak, Darren Drigger, everybody said they didn't sign him to be the backup.
I think the organization would love for Connor Hellebuyck to crank up his game and force Steve Mason to be the backup.
I agree with that, too. And Husser had the idea a month ago, and I agreed with him that come playoff time, Connor Hellebuyck could still be the starting goaltender, you know, come March and April. I agree with that. But out of the gate, it's Steve Mason's the starter. Like, that's what was the start of the season. Now, in two games, is that over? And does Connor Hellebuyck deserve another start? Sure he does. But I don't think of those two games, you change your starting goalie based on what we saw from the team in front of him and just because Connor Hellebuyck had a really good game.
I see no reason to anoint sorry there, Mike, go ahead.
Oh, no. General, I was just going to say, you go game to game. There's absolutely going back to what I was saying about Maurice. It really is a shift-to-shift, game-to-game phenomena. I know that sounds trite. That's one of the cliches of sport. But really, I think that's where it's at. Why do you call a timeout, for instance, so early in the Edmonton game? Because he's saying shift-to-shift, I need to turn the tide. I mean, for instance, I felt one of the decisions that Maurice didn't handle well was when it was 2-1 in the Edmonton game. He sends out Dano Patan. They get scored on. He reins in or gets his mind back and says, yike, I'm going to send out my Shifley line. So he is coaching, I think, shift to shift, game to game. And I think for this upcoming game, Jim, not the season, not anointing him a starter, Hellebuyck's your goalie of the moment. Put him in until otherwise.
Okay, I apologize. I thought you were saying that, like, it's go with Hellebuyck now.
Well, I could go with Hellebuyck for the next game.
Okay.
I think that's the perspective. That's the perspective any fan has to take. You know, to get two down after two games is crazy. You know, I know you're not anointing Vegas a playoff team after three games, but it's fun to do that. But the Jets are truly, in my mind, a game-to-game phenomena because I feel the first two games represented a bunch of guys saying, we got hammered with defensive responsibility and teachings during the preseason. We need a little time. It's like the first season or the first month of the NFL. They need
5 games at a minimum, I think, to frankly assimilate and demonstrate what hopefully Maurice has taught them. We saw a bit of that against Edmonton. I'm hoping they're 500 at the end of the month. That's sort of my perspective, is game to game, month to month. I'm not a fan, as you may know, of the current coach, but we got to give him a chance.
Good stuff, great Mike. Good stuff. We appreciate it. We got to take a break, though. We'll get to more calls and discuss this more when we come back on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki, and your calls on the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. We have some Bomber tickets and Moose tickets to give away at the end of this show. Make sure you stay tuned. And as Brandon has been keeping you up to date, John Farrell is out as manager of the Boston Red Sox after 5 seasons, and Mark Stewart gets a job with a club in Germany. He'll continue his hockey career. It is an interesting discussion. What Mike brings up is the whole, do you keep the lineup the same, as most coaches like to when they're winning? They got to win, and it'll be interesting to see what happens not only at practice today, but who plays, if that whole philosophy of, hey, we won, we keep going.
And I like sometimes the, hey, we won, it can be when you don't necessarily play well, right? Like, I don't never like that narrative when, hey, we just win, so we keep everything the same. When you look at the construction of that win and how much more sound it was than the previous 2 games, that's where I'd really seriously lean to keeping it the exact same.
780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290. Mucker, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Good to see everybody talking about 2 solid goalies this morning. And if you're debating who's going to be our starter, I think that's always a good conversation. I have a question for you guys just about our 4 lines. Now, loved seeing the combinations in the last game, but I just wonder, so we have Shifley, Wheeler, and Ehlers, Lettinen and Perreault, but my question is about the other 2, Lowry, Patan, and Mathias, and Kopp, Dano, and Tanev. And I wonder if you guys think that these 6... call them the bottom 6 or the 3rd and 4th line, can help us get 45 wins this year. Is that going to be our Achilles heel, or are they going to be supportive in the points?
I think, like, if you're talking 45 points from a 3rd line, I think they'll get that. I don't even know who's on it.
I'm going to lean towards more so that the bottom 6, as you're talking about, and what Paul Maurice has constructed up to this point in time, will be the will hold back this team, no question about it. If you would have reeled off the bottom 6 to Jets fans prior to training camp, people would have laughed you out of a room that you're in if you said this is what the Jets bottom 6 are going to be this year. There would have been mass disappointment, I think, right? Like this. And we were talking yesterday, and people were talking depth related to this team. Well, there isn't much like that offensive depth. I'm not so sure that it's there in any form, really, as far as a production standpoint comes from. And I think when you're comparing them to other teams that you're expecting to make the playoffs, you still look at this team right now and the way they've got the bottom 6 constructed, where, it's going to hold them back. You're going to go float your 4th line out there 7 minutes a game on even strength and try and long-term keep up with other playoff-bound teams, I doubt it works.
Yeah, and especially, Lowry, Mathias, Tanev, that's not a 3rd line. It shouldn't be a 3rd line. Yeah. It's a 4th line in all reality. But having said that, I think you can massage the top 9, even with Adam Lowry as your 3rd line center, into having 3 pretty solid lines, and it all involves
Perreault.
That's the one.
Yep.
That's the move right there. If you drop Perreault to the 3rd line, and you have a bunch of options as to who you want to put with either Shifley and Wheeler or with Lettinen, like, you can work it, whether it's a Kopp, a Patan, maybe even a Kyle Connor. Like, I think ultimately this team is going to be better served when Mathieu Perreault who I think is probably the best fit if you're going to have Adam Lowry as their third-line center in terms of adding a play driver and some skill to the line.
Perreault, Lowry, Buff. There's your third line.
Why you got to do that?
I understand the fever around the third line and the top nine debate. I don't understand why it's so big. To me, in those first two games, it was the veterans that really needed improving and really needed to play better.
You're just not going to get the production needed the way it's constructed right now.
But I did, like prior to the first game, because we talked about when Maurice said he wanted to get 40 goals out of the third line, and then whoever was the third line at the start, was it Armia, Lowry, and
Kopp?
And apparently they had 39 goals between them or 35 goals between them going like that at the start.
They just over 30 from last year.
There was
those three.
15 from Lowry,
and then nine
eight
each.
And nine,
yeah.
Or nine each, so 18 and
30, yeah, 32, 33.
Yeah, so 32 goals. So I didn't think 40 goals was unrealistic. Like you're asking for 2 to 3 more goals from each player on that
People
line.
Are also bringing up the even strength situation, though, right? Lowry, 5 of his goals, I think, on the power play. So I think that conversation needs to be had with 5-on-5 understandings. Whether it's
well, yeah, but right? When Nick Petan's on the fourth line, we love watching him on the power play. Like I that's a fourth liner, and we're going to give him credit for power play goals and points.
That's a different it depends on how you want to talk about it. I think when Paul Maurice is talking about wanting 40 goals, I think it's important to ask him, are you talking 5-on-5, or are you talking with power play as well being a part of it? Yeah.
Thanks for the call, Mucker, on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. We'll get to more now. Who's next?
Kevin's back.
Kevin, you're back. Welcome. You're on the Big Show.
Yeah, so I just want to ask a question. Troy, do you think you changed your opinion on Brendan Tanev at all?
As far as a production standpoint?
Or just in general?
What he brings to the table? Yeah, see, and this is the neat thing, Kev. Like, we were talking yesterday, and I thought, you know, after that third game, I thought, boy, like, even that line in general, I thought there were times that they looked pretty good, and I thought Daniel looked good, and Tana's flying all over the place. But then you look at the end of that game, and his possession numbers for that game were at 28%, and you look at what he's done so far this year, and he's at 41%, and like just getting slaughtered out on the ice for shots being generated against compared to shots for. So I I'm going to lean towards, you know, when my eye test lies to me to that degree, I have to lean towards the analytics and the fact of what the numbers are when he is on the ice. So no, yeah, I can't change my opinion at this point. You, what do you think?
I don't know. I think he's an energy guy. And
sure is.
With the line they're going up against, you have to kind of keep that in mind. I mean,
yeah, but it's not like they had like to. Yeah, I agree with that. You have to keep that in mind for sure. And there's no question he's out there. Like, he catches your eye, right? The way he flies around and it's just nonstop and all the rest of it. But I just wonder from a like almost a game sense type of an approach or understanding, you know, if he can't do something about those possession numbers at some point in time, that's what you have to hold him accountable for. You own those possession numbers.
True. The last question is, do you feel Brian Little's a good fit for Laine?
Yeah, I'm right there with it. Yeah, I was starting to wonder that too as well. And to me, like I all along, I don't really understand the holding back the potential of Ehlers, Scheifele, and Laine. And I'm wondering that as well if there's he's being held back on that line a little bit. Hello, TSN. Maybe Kev's gone now, but
yeah.
Have you had that feeling? Like I think there's you're holding something back there from not keeping those three together, having those three together.
It hasn't been electrifying, but I'm not out on it just yet. I mean, I think Brian Little can play with anybody, and we'll see how it goes forward.
And we all know that Little and Wheeler they play together well. Now it's real when you see Ehlers, Scheifele, and Wheeler play at the level they are. It's hard to want to bust that up, but I have no doubt that if Laine was up there with Ehlers and Scheifele, like you're just not going to match the. It doesn't matter who you have with Little on the left side. The right side guy's going to pay, like if it's Laine, you put him in, inject him up there with Scheifele and Ehlers, for sure there's going to be more situations for him to score.
But I'll say this, both ends of the ice on Monday in Edmonton, I thought the best line at both ends was Scheifele, Wheeler, and Ehlers.
Oh yeah, yeah, they were dominant. There's no doubt about that. Little's line was good, but Scheifele's was, they were next level. But I do agree that, or I will say that Scheifele does a much better job at finding Patrick Laine 5-on-5 than Brian Little does. Mm-hmm. Now, does that mean that's how you have to rejig your lines. I don't know if that's necessarily the case.
Or but from should Patrick, that have been the line all the way like out of the gate?
Yeah, but if you're, like, if you're looking to get Patrick Laine going, which I don't think you have to because he's hitting crossbars and posts every single game when he's not scoring, but I think ultimately his numbers would improve playing beside. I just think Scheifele's a better fit stylistically as opposed to Brian Little.
Thanks for the call, Kevin. We appreciate it. On the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Who's next?
We'll get Cody to hang on for a sec, but we'll go back to a different Kevin.
Kevin, number two, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Funny you say that, because actually mine kind of revolves around that particular question.
Oh.
It's a quick three-parter. Do you think that the Golden Knights are going to be doo-doo disturbers in their division, and do you think they could possibly break out? I mean, they've had three decent games. I'm kind of like pleasantly shocked at how well they've done. My next question is, I was thinking yesterday about the Trouba and how well he's been playing, and Byfuglien, how not so great, and we understand there's an injury, but what would you guys think about him possibly moving back up to forward and maybe being the third line grinder or a fourth line doo-doo disturber? And my last question regarding the goalies, with Hellebuyck playing incredibly well the other night, Mason playing subpar even for him, what are your thoughts about, do you think, I mean, with Paul, you know, doing stances on things and changing things around, do you think if Mason has another subpar game the next time he plays, do you think they may call up our goalie from the A and just to send Mason a message and say, look, either you get better or we're going to play the young guns again?
Kevin, first of all, you think Jacob Trouba's had a good start to the season?
I think he has.
I think he was okay against Edmonton. I thought, and look, there's a lot of players that did not play well on the game opener against Toronto, but I thought Trouba was the worst player that night.
Why are you saying that, though? Nothing to do with
it. Because he took a bad penalty that killed all the momentum, hooking out of the zone, a dumb penalty, and then he was on the ice for four goals against. He just wasn't good at all.
But that had nothing to do with his questions. Why are you bringing that up?
Because he said with Trouba playing the way as good as he is, and then asked, should we move Buff to forward? Oh. And so I said, do you think Trouba? Now, don't get me wrong. I think Jacob Trouba is a top two defenseman on this team. I just don't think he's played well out of the gate here.
You know what, man? I like what you're talking about. I think that, imagine the, if, I think the Jets, you know, overall, I think if, with Tucker, just if, like, projecting forward a little bit, if Tucker Pullman ends up being this year's Josh Morrissey on the right side there, and you're looking at the bottom six situation for the Jets, that third line becomes considerably stronger. I think with Buff as a forward, I know some people break out in hives considering Buff as a forward, but I think that he's pretty effective up there, and I love what he does to opposing goalies. He got much more physical and was seemingly, to me, more engaged at that time. If that move was ever made, if they felt comfortable with Tucker Pullman to play the right side in the 5-6 pairing, I would love to see that move made, but I really strongly disagree with what you were implying about Steve Mason, implying that he was playing poorly. I don't think Steve Mason has played poorly at all. I think what was in front of him was an absolute gong show train wreck, and that he paid a price for it. But I, you know, break down every goal that happens, and there was only one goal of the ones that he surrendered that I thought was even that you could even say was a bad goal, and it went through him from a short distance away. Other than that, all the goals, I didn't think he had much of a chance.
I'm reaching for 7 scratching sticks and some ointment. I've got so many hives about Dustin Byfuglien going back to forward. I never, ever want to see that again, especially at this age and this stage of his career. At best, he was an average third-line forward. I think, and Chantel's asking us on Twitter as well, what about a second line of Laine, Little, Buff? I don't see Dustin Byfuglien as a forward ever again.
Well, and at the price tag he's at, I don't want 7.5 on my third line. Like, if you don't think he's good enough to play defense on your team, then at that point, I'm looking to move him way before I put him at forward.
And the last question from Kevin was the Golden Knights. I don't think – you know what? I agree with Troy's assessment. They're going to play hard night in, night out. That's just a George Gallant team. I just don't see them good enough. Look, they beat Dallas, and they beat Dallas because Ben Bishop left the game. And then one of the worst-performing goaltenders came in and gave up 2 goals. And they beat Arizona twice. And I had them winning last night's game so much I bought a Sports Select ticket on it because the home opener and all the fever around that. I give them full credit for being 3-0. I give James Neal full credit and Marc-Andre Fleury. I just don't think they'll even be close to the playoffs this year.
Yeah, and well, and to me, I think they're going to be a super tough out with Gerard Gallant as the coach, and I think that they'll continue to batten down things defensively and become strong. But right now, the fact of the matter is, after three games, Marc-Andre Fleury is sitting with a .963 save percentage, and there's no way in the world that maintains itself going forward. Even if Marc-Andre Fleury plays out of his mind this year, and it, actually, if he does, and let's say that he's somewhere between a .920 and a .925, I think they can be somewhere mid-pack in the Pacific if Marc-Andre Fleury continues that, like maybe he's, you know, settle into a 4-5-6 sort of a spot, possibly, depending on the struggles of Arizona and maybe some. But I would expect them to settle down, you know, somewhere just above Arizona. But they're in tough. But I think they'll be a tough out. Jonathan Davis, I believe, described them, or maybe it was Arizona, as just good enough to lose. And I think on a lot of occasions that's what you're going to see with Gerard Gallant trying to minimize damage against them most nights.
Plus, expect them to be sellers at the deadline, too, with all the UFAs that they have. And if James Neal continues to play like he has, Vegas can pass up what would probably be a first-round pick in a trade for James Neal if he continues somewhat on the pace that he's
on. And probably a prospect. If he's got 35, 40 goals and you're going into a playoffs.
Yeah, you can't give up that kind of value if you're Vegas.
Thanks for the call, Kevin. Cody, if you could hang on, we got to take a break, but we'll get to you next and anybody else on the Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on The Big Show.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who's dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them soon. The Boss Pizza Fan Line on The Big Show with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Cody, you're on the program. Go ahead. Good morning, Cody. No Cody. We'll go to Keith. Keith, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing today, boys?
Good. How are you?
Good. Just listening earlier, I loved Troy's comment there saying our third line should be with Bufflin, Lowry, and Perreault. Could you just imagine that? Like, that just turns our team into having a bottom six to a complete solid top nine that can compete with any other teams. Move up Kopp with Little and Wheeler, and you can have Shifley with Ehlers and Reimer like it should be, and that gives our whole team a bigger dynamic, I believe.
I agree 100% with that. Like, they've got to do something to shift things around, and I know putting Buff up is a bit of a stretch for a lot of people to hear that, right? But the point that I'm making is if Tucker Poolman is able to maintain the level of play, is somebody going to tell me that the Jets are going to suffer from a defensive standpoint because of that?
How is Buff's defensive game as a forward?
He was tuned in pretty good when he played there, man.
I don't know if you're going to get full commitment from him again, playing a position he doesn't want to. I just don't think it's the right move.
I don't think so either.
If you're going to, and I said this earlier, but if you're seriously thinking about that, then I would look at a trade before I would move him to forward.
Or while he's playing forward.
Thanks for the call, Keith. Miguel, you're on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on The Big Show. Go ahead, Miguel.
Hey, guys. I've got two themes of mathematics and the harvest. And first on the harvest, if the apples have come in and they're in the barrel and we've got one bad one, it's more important to remove the bad one than to add more good ones because the bad one's going to spoil the bunch. When it comes to mathematics...
Are you talking about Bufflin?
Yes, and sometimes when it comes to sports, it's about mathematics and that old adage of addition by subtraction. So,
but if Bufflin's a bad apple, as you want to... He's not...
But not as
like,
a
he's
guy.
Not a Vander Kane.
No, well, he's not saying that, though. But from a team standpoint, you can have someone that's not dialed in and freelancing out there, Jim, and he affects the team in a negative manner, although he's loved in the locker room.
Fair enough, but he wasn't the only guy freelancing. He wasn't the only guy.
Nobody does it as flagrantly as he does, Jim. Nobody.
I just
for years.
Yeah, but that's also what makes him good. It's also what makes him a 50-point defenseman for four years in a row, save for the Jim, 1 year he only played 69 games.
There is one word for this team and one word only to focus on, and that is defense. And that's why I understand from a general standpoint that building a third line that can produce 30 or 40 goals makes sense in general. But for this team, based on its production last year and the big guns it has up front, there should be nothing but the focus on defense in making these decisions. And that's why I don't care if Byfuglien is in the press box as much as Sheveldayoff will hate that, or if he's putting tape on sticks, or he's draining the hot tub.
Oh, okay, Miguel, we need to get to your second point because we're almost out of time. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, that was it.
Thanks for the call. We'll touch on this.
I agree with what you're saying, Miguel, because the foundation of defense is discipline, right? And if you don't have that discipline, you don't ever have a chance to locking into to decent defensive structure.
We're out of time. I'm sure we'll talk more about this tomorrow as it is a Jets game day. Keep it locked here for the latest on the lineups as well. We have a pair of tickets to the Bombers and Lions Saturday at IGF and a pair of tickets to the Moose home opener this Friday. 780-1290 if you want to get in on those. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for listening, all your comments and calls and tweets, and we'll do it again tomorrow morning on a game day here in your home of the Jets, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.